I don't know if you've seen the new lights. Your mic's still on now.
Go sit down with the group.
So, yeah, we reversed it. So this mute when it...
Okay, good.
Well, it's still live until it's muted.
Okay, thanks.
No, if you just want to speak, your mic's on when your mic's on, light's on now.
Because it's yellow, it's not red anymore.
It's not, yes, we changed the color so it made it easier to remember. So you're on. On, off. I know. On, off. Okay, so now you're live.
Ready to catch him?
Good morning. Your body looks longer as
well. We're live.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good morning and welcome to our December 11th meeting. And the little bit of levity is that we just changed the lighting mechanism over here. So now when your microphone is on, the light has to say mute as opposed to being off. The opposite of the way it's been for the last 18 months. Is that correct, Madam Clerk?
The government, we're here to help.
Just the opposite, yes.
Entertain a motion to go past 5 o'clock? Gotcha. If you'd all please rise and join me in the flag salute.
No. That's to the motion.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you like to read the changes?
You have one change to today's agenda. It's item C1, hearing to consider a resolution vacating a portion of Stanton Street, County Road Number 1145, and Cali Laguna, County Road Number 1406 in the town of Arroyo Grande, 4th District. This item was introduced on October 16, 2007. Recommendations for approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that this item be amended to attach exhibits A and B that were inadvertently omitted and to replace page 2 of the resolution correcting an error in paragraph number 9. The exhibits and replacements pages are attached for your approval. That's your changes for today.
Thank you. Entertain a motion.
For approval. Second.
For what?
Just for the heck of it.
For chairman's desire to approve the
exhibits. Are you just checking to see if I'm paying attention?
Yes, ma'am. For somebody that just got back from a week in Hawaii, we had to give her a little test here to make sure that she was still here and not in Hawaii.
What are you making a motion for, sir?
Just testing.
Oh, okay, good.
Nice, just teasing.
One after 5 o'clock.
No, Harry said not after 5 o'clock just yet.
No resolution.
There is no resolution.
Okay.
Carrying on.
No resolution, no presentation this morning. So we'll move back onto the rules of the day here. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Supervisor, public comment. Sidewalk here. We had a few people trickling in here. Our first request to speak is Mr. Victor Holanda.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good morning. I am Vic Holanda, the director of the Planning and Building Department. I'm here this morning, in essence, to respond to some criticisms of the department from last week. You had 4 speakers come to the lectern and openly criticize our department. I'll be the first to admit our department makes mistakes. There's no doubt about it. What I take exception to is when the criticism of the department is inaccurate. Of the 4 people who came to this podium last week, I personally spoke to 3 of them. Well, let me start with Ms. Nolan's comment regarding just getting a letter from the department. She had a valid criticism of the department whereby she was alleging that her name was disclosed publicly when it shouldn't have been. I explained in the letter to her she was correct. It was accidental. There was no malice intended. I apologized, not only on my behalf, but on the part of the staff. And I told her I'm not taking any punitive action against the staff because there was no malice intended. There was no conspiracy. There's no, quote-unquote, to quote her, a rat in the department. It was an honest mistake. And then to come here and then infer that we didn't do anything is outrageous. We did something. On the other criticisms, I, like anybody else, find sometimes the regulations outrageous, whether they be federal or state. They're frustrating. They're frustrating to you. They're frustrating to the Planning Commission. But when you took this office, as well as I, when I swore I would uphold the Constitution and the laws that I'm supposed to uphold, as well as my staff, we do it to the best of our ability. It frustrates our applicants. We know that. That's why we have pre-application meetings. That's why we have one-on-one meetings with applicants. That's why we have one-on-one meetings with you. But to have someone come to the podium and express, again, that it's your department that's causing them to not be treated fair is incorrect. The public is paying for our services, and I truly believe the money you invest in us is worth every nickel. On the other issues, I too am frustrated with the California Coastal Act, but we're required to apply the Coastal Act to any application in the coastal zone along with our own regulations. My staff don't have the discretion to say to any applicant, I'll take care of it for you. Don't worry about those requirements in the statutes or the county regulations. I'll take care of it for you. I know my time's up, but I want to say this. Mr. Chairman, all it takes is for frustrated applicants to meet with our staff. We will resolve it. If they don't get satisfaction there, obviously we have a process where they can meet with me or yourselves. But I resent the fact that people come to this lectern and openly criticize us without any basis. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Lennon, and also thank you for clarifying that. I think it's important to understand that anything in government is obviously a two-way street, and you've got to maintain that dialogue. And in that situation, it obviously there was a disconnect. Supervisor Gibson?
I would second. I appreciate Mr. Hollande's comments, and I would add to them that another path that residents of this county have is to contact their supervisor's office directly. And I know at least one of the folks who was speaking last week was expressing a lot of frustration and felt they had to bring it here in public to get something done. And I would point out that, and I believe I speak for my colleagues as well, that if folks have questions about how any aspect of county government operates, they are more than welcome to call me. They will either talk to me or to my legislative assistant, and it is our job to help folks get results and understanding out of how county government works. So I'd like to add that to the mix as ways in which folks can limit the frustrations of what is, as Mr. Hollande indicates, a complicated system. Thank you, sir.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I too want to thank Vic for coming down. Oftentimes, public comment is a one-way street, and it provides a forum for people to vent, and you don't always get both sides of the story, and I appreciate Vic coming down and clarifying some statements that were made last week. Thank you, Vic.
Next speaker is Eric Greening, followed by Robin Bell.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and I understand that early in the year, I believe the middle of January, you're going to be making your resource management findings for the year. And in preparing for that, there are a couple of things I would like as sort of background so that you can take follow-up actions and improve the way the system works from year to year. One is, I would like if our GIS people could provide a series of maps showing exactly what is currently covered in the system and what is not. We have certain named communities where we look at things like roads and schools. With water supply, we look at groundwater basins. In every case, there is not complete coverage of our county's unincorporated area, and so there are large, significant regions that don't seem to get the benefit of this planning process, this process that allows us the foresight to see problems coming and hopefully head them off before we're at a level of severity 3, but that if we are at a level of severity 3, to deal with it. So that's one request, to simply have something in the background of what areas are being covered and what areas are not, so that during the ensuing year you can make plans for finding ways to cover the areas that are not. The other thing is simply some legal information. We have been in the habit of making findings relative to the adequacy of schools, but of assuming we can't actually act on those findings being preempted, local government being preempted from adjusting growth rates relative to school capacity. My memory is that that was a limited time preemption. Somewhere around 8 years ago, the voters of the state approved a proposition which was a school bond tied to a provision that for 8 years or so preempted local government from using in school lack of capacity in adjusting growth rates or deciding whether projects should be approved. I think we are pretty close to the expiration of that limited time provision, and I don't know of any mechanism by which it can be, could be, or has been renewed. So I would hope that could be clarified before we embark on this year's resource management summary, so that we know essentially whether schools are on a level playing field with other resources in determining your own local ability to act. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Robin Bell, followed by Jerry Walsh.
Hi. I'm a landowner and soon-to-be resident of Carissa Plains.
You need to state your name for the record, Ms.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Robin Bell.
Thank you.
I support alternative energy. However, the solar thermal power plant Azura is proposing does not belong on Carissa Plains. Although the California Energy Commission is the leading government agency on this project, public and county agency opinions are considered of value. I'm asking the Board of Supervisors to help prevent the construction of this plant. I found the following information in Azura's application to the Energy Commission. Azura's technology utilizes mirrors to reflect sunlight onto water-filled pipes, which are approximately 56 feet above ground level. These pipes would be approximately 4.5 stories tall over the entire 640-acre site. Steam from the hot water pipes then powers a huge turbine. The water is then cooled in two giant condensers. These condenser structures are about 200 feet wide, 250 feet long, and 115 feet tall. That's two structures about 10 stories tall on the Carissa Plains. These massive structures well exceed height limits for ag land use in our general plan and will be a permanent scar on the plains. In addition, the steep driven turbine produces noise which will be audible for well over a mile. This would include the Carissa Plains Elementary School. During the 3-year construction period, noise pollution will be much greater. San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District has documented that diesel and dust emissions will exceed allowable levels and are concerned about possible health risks at the school. Azura expects their plant will utilize approximately 19,000 gallons of water daily. As you know, water is a vital resource on the plains, and quality water is only on the upper level of the water table. If the plant's water use lowers our water table, our quality water is depleted. San Luis Obispo's Water Resource Unit of the Public Works Department has documented to the Energy Commission they are concerned the plant's water usage will affect our water level and that the plant's wastewater disposal will affect our water quality. Clearly, this power plant does not belong on the Carrizo Plains. It would destroy our scenic vistas, create noise and air pollution, threaten our only water source, and thus greatly affect the quality of life on the plains. I ask you, our Board of Supervisors, to publicly support the preservation of the Carrizo Plains and its rural and agricultural character. Please send your united opinion to the California Energy Commission.
Ms. Bell, unfortunately your time is up, but I'll give you an extra 10 seconds in the spirit of the holiday Christmas. How's that?
Thank you. All I'm asking is to send your opinion to the California Energy Commission and let them know this doesn't belong on the plains.
Thank you for your comments. Jerry Walsh, followed by Richard Markison.
Good morning, Jerry Walsh. I would like to extend our thanks from the Maxine Lewis Memorial Homeless Shelter to all of you as supervisors for participating in this wonderful event, and for Mr. Edge, Mr. Gibson, Mr. Achajian, and Mr. Patterson for actually coming out to it and saying a few words to us. It was a great success, and Richard will speak more on that. But I just want to mention, oh, and also thank you to your staff for coming out, too. I want to mention that this is still a big problem in our county. And we have, on one hand, again, as I said before, county benefiting from the Duval Ranch, having clients there, keeping them out of detoxing at the sheriff's station, at the facilities that we are paying for. And Mr. Duval is taking in these people on one hand, and we are prosecuting him for taking them on the other hand. And I know you're working on this issue, but I think maybe all of you as supervisors, since it is a countywide problem, please get involved in this. They're trying to sell Christmas trees to support what's going on at the ranch, sell wood, give a productive means of coming back into society to these people. And people who have moved in across the street don't want to see this going on. There's got to be some type of resolution. And since it's a countywide problem, I hope you will all get involved in this issue and see if we can somehow come to an understanding that will help Mr. Duval help the problem in the county. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walsh. I want to assure you that there are a lot of people in county staff that are involved in this, not just Supervisor Gibson. I've had meetings with him also on this, so we are all involved in this. Unfortunately, it is going to be a very labor-intensive process. Last request to speak is Richard Markinson.
Richard Markinson. I also want to thank everybody that participated. The event last year raised $18,867, and we don't have a total yet because the change hasn't been counted and there's still silent auction items to be picked up. But kind of projecting out, it's looking like we're at least 20% over last year, at least. You know, that's great, and everybody that participated is happy with that, but, you know, it's still not enough. It was very cold last night, and there's still people sleeping in the creek. There's still people sleeping across the street from the homeless shelter. There's still veterans without shelter. Men and women that put on the uniform to defend us are without shelter in this country, in this county. There's children that are homeless. There's no way you can blame a child for being homeless, ever. And as I've said before, the square footage of the homeless shelter would fit in the lobby of this building. We need more space. We need more space for beds. The other thing I want to talk about just briefly is at some point it's got to go from having a place for the homeless to actually going out and engaging the homeless. There are a lot of resources available that the homeless in this county don't know about. and I can give you examples. There's no way in 3 minutes. That's what's got to change. The word has to get out there to these people that these services are available. You know, we should be knocking on car doors and telling people that, you know, you don't have to sleep in your car tonight. There are places in this county. You know, we shut down all our community centers at night and lock the doors. I think that's got to change. I think there's got to be a change to go towards some type of warming centers at some point. You know, it's been very cold this last couple of weeks at 2 in the morning. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Thank you, everyone, and we hope to see you all next year.
Mr. Markins, Supervisor Patterson has a question or a comment here.
Actually, just a comment. Richard and Jerry, I want to thank you and the citizens of Los Osos and citizens throughout the county that came and participated in Needs and Wishes. We have an item on our consent agenda today that will alter the staffing in DSS if we're successful. We've changed our position allocation, and hopefully we'll have someone at the helm very soon to work with the Homeless Services Coordinating Council to help develop and implement a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness in San Luis Obispo County. So the county's a player, but without efforts of the citizenry of the county and all the nonprofits that focus their efforts on serving the homeless, we wouldn't be successful. So again, thank you and the citizens of Los Osos for sponsoring this event. And as you said, it was more successful than last year, and it'll be more successful next year, I'm sure, as people catch on. So,
since I didn't use all my time, can I just mention one more thing? At our Homeless Advisory Council meeting last week, one thing I forgot to mention, there's a great need for blankets. So I'm going to give a phone number, and I'm going to give the address. They actually had to hand out 3 or 4 sheets instead of a blanket to certain people 2 weeks ago when they came, that they had to turn away. There weren't enough blankets. So the phone number is 541-6351, 541-6351, and the address is 750 Orchid Road. Thank you.
Thank you. That was our last request to speak, so we'll close public comment, bring back, move on to the consent agenda. And I think that's worth repeating just in case people are listening sometimes hear the number and say, well, I don't want to play the tape back or whatever. But if you want to donate blankets or donate anything for that matter to the homeless shelter, the address is 750 Orchid Road. The phone number is 541-6351. And I'm sure all of us have a blanket somewhere probably we can donate. On the consent agenda, Supervisor Robert, any items, sir?
Did you want to allow for public comment?
Didn't receive any. I'm sorry. I didn't.
You have one for being up there.
I apologize.
No, I don't have any.
I did receive one request to speak. Eric Greening, please. Apologize, Edgar. You got stuck to another one over here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so cold, the speaker slips freeze together, I guess. I am Eric Greening, and this is on item B9, an amended agreement with Hanson Environmental relative to the Arroyo Grande Creek Habitat Conservation Plan and Environmental Assessment. And I see nothing in the staff report to indicate that the environmental coverage of this plan has changed. So I'm raising the concern again that essentially we are looking at everything from the dam to about 3 miles from the mouth of the creek, and that this is a hydrologic unit, particularly if you ask Sammy the Steelhead and his friends. The creek goes all the way to the ocean, and I'm just wondering how we are integrating the concerns all the way to the mouth of the creek. I know that the state parks is also doing a habitat conservation plan, which is like one of those mirages. The next draft will be out in a few months, and that has been the case for a couple of years now. And obviously, there are some huge issues in their part of the territory. Essentially, the mouth of the creek is used as a road, and that has an effect upstream relative to habitat for the steelhead, the tidewater goby and a lot of other creatures. But my enduring question is, how is the uncovered part of the creek going to fit into the picture? I know the Resource Conservation District is making a lot of efforts, and they may have some ingredients that will go into the basket, but who's watching the basket as a whole? And given the need to take the time to work with all of these other agencies, is there perhaps the opportunity to revisit the geographical coverage of this HCP and recognize the entire creek as a unit all the way to the ocean? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was our only request to speak. Seeing no one else step forward, we'll close public comment. Moving on to the consent agenda here. Supervisor Rowland?
No items, sir.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Comment on B9 and B13.
And I have a comment on B8. Supervisor Asajan?
No.
Supervisor Gibson? And
it's all been covered, sir.
All covered. Well, let's see. I guess I get the low number here. Supervisor Patterson, I'm going to go first. One of the things that happens every now and then, especially in county government, and there's a lot of people here that will attest to this, is things go in cycles. A lot of us baby boomers seem to be approaching the retirement age. And today I think the significance is we're going to recognize 8 individuals from our Public Works Department, which total 224 years of service. Talk about a lot of institutional knowledge that walks out the door when those people leave. That's a tremendous void to fill. So what I wanted to do was to ask Pablo Ogren to step forward and just make a comment on a couple of people. And I had a request for a group photo. This is kind of a historical event. We probably won't have 8 people retire on the same day at the same time again, so we'll ask.
At least we hope not to. I had a county policy not to have that many retire from the department at the same time.
Sean, is there an ordinance that we're violating today by having 8 people retire at the same day?
From the same department.
From the same department. Anyway, like that. So, Mr. Ogren, if you do the honors, please. And like I said, I think this is it's a bittersweet moment for all of us. But I know there's a lot of family and friends and coworkers that are out here in the audience as well as watching today. So if you would take the lead and introduce a couple of those folks and have them come up. And I'm told we have a camera that has a battery, that everything's going to work perfect this morning when we have our group photo.
Chairman Lenthal, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Department. Certainly it is an honor to introduce our retirees this year. And as you mentioned, Chairman Lenthal, will be a lot of big shoes to fill. With the onset of the retirement of the baby boomers, we're a little bit concerned that this is just the beginning of the wave, but certainly we want to focus on the individuals today. So in introduction, we have, and I'm not sure if they're all here today, but I'm going to certainly mention all the names, a couple of strong men who have supported our road systems throughout the years, Raleigh Green and Tom Stokes. And as I mention your names, if everybody can come up.
Mr. Rover, if I may, as they say at Thursday Night Farmers Market, come on down.
A couple of senior engineers who have been leading in capital project management, Ray Uter, who's been working our bridge programs, and Carmen Fojo, who's been working on our utilities division programs. Two division heads, a couple of individuals who are consistently right in their recommendations, even when they are challenged. Mark Sullivan, who has been the leader in our finance division and administration, and George Gibson, our design engineer. Lastly, certainly not least, a couple of individuals who your board members see frequently. Tim Smith, our right-of-way agent, often in both closed session and in public hearings, advising your board, a trusted advisor on eminent domain and many property rights issues. And, of course, the leader of the department, the current Public Works Director, who's been on Realm, the first Public Works Director for your board of supervisors for the last several years, Noel King. On behalf of the department, Tom, Carmen, Ray, George, Mark, Tim, Noel, and Raleigh.
Is that 12 or no?
Thank you for your years of leadership and friendship and support. Certainly, on behalf of the department, we wish you all a long and healthy and retirement, and best wishes to all.
Thank you. Mr. Ogren, 1 year. One of your practical skill tests in leadership now is to get this group up here in an orderly fashion so we can have our photo taken.
Design it, they'll build it.
Glenn, can you also come up for the
thank
photo?
You. Congratulations.
Thank you for your service.
You just come sit right next to me. Yeah. It's been fun.
No? See you guys down somewhere.
Thank you. You got a few more days to finish?
No, they're done.
Thanks, Lisa. That's all right.
Yeah. Okay, you're going to have gray hair.
Yeah, really.
You got to back down this way.
Well, thanks for your
here, Pavel. It's all yours. Line them up. In the finest engineering fashion, look at Pavel's eyes, making sure everybody's squared away here.
And then Glenn and I are going to jump in.
Oh, no.
Better get some fast film if you're going to jump in, Pavel.
You guys are not retiring, are you?
Pavel and
you're going to have to work hard. Feel like you're Hamily.
Yeah.
One more.
All right.
Thank you.
Like I said, 224 years of institutional knowledge is a tremendous void to fill. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, I just wanted to make a...
On his
don't
own.
Tell them to leave yet.
They can leave. I just ain't wanted to yet. Say, in my short career here on the board, I've had the pleasure of not working with all of the retiring individuals, but with many of them. And, of course, Noel being at the helm, he was always there to answer my questions. And when he didn't know the answer, he knew who did and would get back to me right away with that. And I appreciate that. He's also... a bicyclist, and I appreciate that as well, Noel. When I first came on the board, Mark Sullivan was the liaison from Public Works to the Santa Margarita Area Advisory Committee, the CSA 23, which is the community services area. And they had a lot of issues going on there relative to streets and water, and Mark was... very proficient in guiding that group, which is a citizen volunteer committee, through the process and providing the information that they needed to move forward. So I particularly wanted to thank them. And then this past Saturday, I was at a Habitat for Humanity groundbreaking in Atascadero, and who was there to entertain us but Tim Smith singing in a church choir, and so I know he's got a future outside of engineering when he moves on. So I wish you all well, and thank you for your service to the county all those many years.
Supervisor Ova, did you want to talk before Tim Smith starts caroling us this morning?
Yeah, that's all he's done for a long time is sing to us. And I mean, there's a lot of talent, and I was kidding with the Carmen Foe because I was privileged when we first hired her. And ironically, there's a connection because we had a little thing up there in Los Osos called the landfill, and that became permanent employee. Now they call it utilities, but and then I'd like to say that George Gibson was the guru of Los Osos before he finally acquiesced to through the chain, Noel King, and then back down to Pablo, and we actually did have a project ready to go, so. But that's part of that 264 years of knowledge that was back there. And Mark, actually, Mark is in a position Noel was in, I don't know how many years ago, and you can see how that internally that we've been able to move up. But I kid with Mark because after he gave up on Santa Margarita, he came to Shandon to try to build a water tank. And I won't say how long that took, but I'm going to, you know, a lot of these guys, we've gone through some before that just a lot of institutional knowledge that we're going to miss. And I hope to see you guys come back and give some advice once in a while, even though we may disagree, but, you know, we'd still like to have you back around. And the institutional knowledge is what we're losing, and we need to keep that going. And I just want to say congratulations and wish you the best.
Supervisor Gibson?
I'm going to add my good wishes as well. I actually go back with at least a couple of these folks long before I ever got to the board. I remember meeting George back in the mid-90s and work around Cayucas. And similarly, Tim has been in and out of issues that I've been involved with for a very long time. I have particularly enjoyed getting to know other members of the department as I've gone through this year. And you see the project team in Los Osos is usually Mr. Ogren and Mr. Waddell and others in that bunch. But behind it all is Noel. And I've just been a real pleasure to work with you, Noel, on that and other things and working out all the things that a lot of people want and can't necessarily have. I've come in this last year to really appreciate the complexity of what you do as well as the skill with which your folks do it. And as I would add my thanks for 224 years and my concern at its loss in the same breath. So best wishes to all here.
Supervisor Asajjian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, publicly want to thank you. 224 years of knowledge, experience, expertise, and to have 9 years of that to share with you, I want to appreciate every moment of that I personally was educated by you. Thank you for all what you have done. You've been true assets to our community. You'll be missed, and that is Paul's challenge, to see how he handles that all. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think for the last word, Supervisor Patterson.
Yeah, I get a second at-bats here. Following the comments of Supervisor Gibson and Supervisor Asajjian, we will miss all of you and the energy and effort you've put into the county for 224 years collectively. But I would be remiss, or we would be remiss, if we didn't also comment on the fact that you've prepared other staff members in the department to follow in your footsteps. And I think it's, for the most part, going to be a rather seamless transition simply because you had the foresight to prepare the department, members of your department, to fill your shoes. And I think you all should be commended for that as well, because it'll help make the transition easier for the county. So thank you for that.
Thank you all again. Let's give them one more round of applause. That, Supervisor Patterson, did you want to make a comment on B9?
Yes, on is on. It'll take us a while to figure it out. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Greening brought up an issue relative to Arroyo Grande Creek and the HCP, and I know Mr. Bird is here in the audience, and he might be able to speak to that issue that Mr. Greening raised. But a comment I had is that I noticed that we've already extended this contract once, and we did that in February of 06, and we're extending it again to January 2012. And my question to Mr. Bird is whether or not the biological assessment has been done, and maybe he can speak to the fact that we have another extension before us. And my experience in bureaucracy is this extension that we're authorizing today, should we pass this, would be for another 4 years. And my feeling is if we give them 4 years, they'll take 4 years. And maybe we should think about shortening that. I would at least like you to comment on it, because this will be, if we do approve this, 6 years of an extension of a contract. I know very little money has been expended from that contract, which implies to me that a lot of work hasn't been done, but I am concerned that it continues to move out into the future, and it's important that we get the work done, I do believe. So, Mr. Bird, could you comment on those issues?
Certainly. Doug Bird, County Public Works staff. You're correct. This project has been going for quite some time. I've been the project manager on it ever since its inception. The portion of the process we're in right now comes after the actual final draft of the Habitat Conservation Plan was developed and submitted to the resource agencies, which include National Marine Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on the federal side, and the California Department of Fish and Game, and then the other interested stakeholders. Basically, we're at the point now in time where we're really subject to the whim, if you will, of the federal agencies, and we've been in negotiations with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and National Marine Fisheries Service, which, to use the acronym, is NMFS. And NMFS really is the controlling agency in that we have the steelhead trout that they protect in Arroyo Grande Creek. We have been meeting with them on a regular basis, and in fact, we just had a meeting with them last week. And at that meeting, we agreed that it would be beneficial to all parties concerned, as well as to the environment and the fish out there, if we picked up the pace with our meetings. And so we are intending to do so. The length of the extension on the amendment before your board today was one that I selected in that I didn't. Frankly, I'm more optimistic than what we're asking for, but considering the staff time and everything that it takes to come to your board, and the extension and the original contract do allow the Public Works Director to terminate the contract at the time we complete negotiations. And again, as you mentioned, we haven't really spent that much money with Hanson Environmental to this point, so we're not asking for additional funds. So my hope is that this contract and this process and completing the HCP and getting a document that all of us can agree on will take less time than what we're asking for in this contract amendment.
Do you have a commitment from the federal and state agencies that you mentioned to move this process forward?
At our meeting last week, we met with Anthony Spina, who oversees this portion of the National Marine Fisheries territory. And he indicated that he was going to go back and talk to his management and request that they allow him to spend more time on this project so we can keep it moving. Frankly, he's expressed his concern to us that he's, you know, because of staffing reductions and that sort of thing at the federal level, that he's not had a lot of sufficient time to deal with it, but our coming to him and saying, look, we're ready to move this along and pick it up. He says he can take that back to his management and request that he be allowed to spend more time working on this.
Okay. Thank you. And could you comment on Mr. Greening's comment about the reach of the creek that is not currently covered in the HCP?
That comes about for a couple of things. You'll recall that there was a point in time where the county elected to turn the flood control portion of the Arroyo Grande Channel over to the state for management. At that point in time, we looked at it and we said, well, the HCP really is, it covers the actions that the county can take and that the county has control over. If the state is managing the flood control portion of Arroyo Grande Creek, we don't have control over that, so we can't add any of those activities into the HCP. We actually had studies done from the mouth of the river all the way to the dam. The other thing is that the process that we're following under the Environmental Species or Endangered Species Act takes longer than the other sections could to address this. As I said, I've been the project manager on this project for, well, before we started with Hanson and the prior contractors, I think some 8 years now. And we're expecting a couple more years to go before we get it wrapped up. Under another section of the ESA, you could get a habitat conservation plan done within a year or so. And the concern was that, and we did discuss having the flood control section of the creek added into our document, but the concern is that it's going to take a long time for us to get done with this, as can be seen, and longer than it would be under the other section of the ESA where it could be done and the permitting can be done within a year.
So the environmental issues in that lower reach are being evaluated through a different process then?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to comment that if there is anything that this board can do to expedite things, if we can lend our weight to the process, please let us know.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Patterson, did you want to move on to B13?
Yes, and I just wanted to follow up with the comments I made during public comment regarding this effort on the part of the Department of Social Services to restructure their position allocation to allow for a full-time person to address the homeless issue, among other things. But we have not had a designated staff person interacting with the Homeless Services Coordinating Council. We lost the lead a few months ago and haven't been able to replace them, and hopefully with the restructuring here we'll be able to do that and move the process along, have the county more intimately involved in the process and taking a leadership role. And I'm very supportive of the recommendation from the Department of Social Services to make the changes in their position allocation so we can move forward with this.
Thank you. And in my confusion this morning, I thought that I was also going to make a comment. And I'd like to publicly thank our Chief of Probation Officer, Kim Barrett. And I know I'm going to get in trouble. She always tells me I'm on probation. I'm not sure how am I on probation for the rest of my life, Kim? To talk about some good work that not only she does, but her department does. In a time when the state's cutting budgets and where we're scrounging for money, Kim consistently finds grants, finds programs, finds matching money, and to say that we got an increase this year of another $100,000 from a program we had before regarding placement and reentry, I think is commendable in these financial times. So, Kim, I want to publicly thank you for the great work that you and your department does, and I apologize for embarrassing you, and I know I'm in trouble.
As amended. There's no amendments. No, that was for
C1. I'm sorry.
Mr. Patterson, second?
Yes.
Motion by Supervisor Ovid as amended, second by Supervisor Patterson. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. With that, Madam Clerk, could you introduce the next item?
Next item on your agenda is item C1. This is a hearing to consider a resolution vacating a portion of Stanton Street, County Road Number 1145, and Cali Laguna, County Road Number 1406. In the town of Arroyo Grande, 4th District. This item was introduced on October 16, 2007. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign, and a reminder that this item was amended at the beginning of your agenda this morning.
Mr. Smith, if I may, before you leave, are you going to give us a singing telegram or some demonstration here of your talents?
No, thank you. Dale Wolf is our director, and he said
you need
no
to
way.
Turn the lights on, Dale.
Dale Wolf said no, no can do.
I think county council says we have authority to request that. Isn't that true, Mr. Cash?
I've been following their advice for years. I'm Tim Smith, your county right-of-way agent. This morning, we have a matter concerning the Calle Laguna and Stanton Street. All the owners of the properties in Black Lake Rancho Estates petitioned for this road vacation to extinguish public use to allow creation of a closed gated community. The property owners requested the board consideration. The Public Works has reviewed this and find in support of said resolution before you today. County Council has reviewed. We've amended the resolution as the Madam Clerk indicated today. Vacation of the subject road, these are findings in fact, will not impair private access nor will affect existing traffic circulation. Owners of the adjacent parcels agree to maintain subject roads. Vacation is in the public interest in that the county will extinguish right-of-way interest and will not be liable for certain maintenance responsibilities. And will allow the establishment of a gated community as desired by the property owners of Black Lake Ranch Estates. A notice of vacation is attached to said resolution as a constructive notice to future owners of Tract 1710, and it's also referenced in Provision 10 of the resolution. This recommendation is consistent with board policy regarding low-volume local roads not being accepted into the county-maintained system. Proper postings and mailings were made. There is no objection to this request for vacation were received. Letters of support were received, as well as a letter from the CDF, Captain Zarlik, indicating compliance with CDF stated conditions for approval. Matter was originally scheduled back in August, but my daughter was having her granddaughter, so we couldn't make it. But there was some access issues that were to be resolved with the help of legal representative Ken Bornholt for Baltigawa and the property owners. We achieved an agreement, and that brings this matter to your board. Notice of vacation document will be filed after the adoption and recording of the subject resolution. The department is recommending adoption of the subject resolution and recordation of the attached notice subsequent to the adoption of the resolution. I'd happy to answer any of your questions today. The requesting property owners are here today, as well as Mr. Bornholt, legal representative.
Any questions from board members of Mr. Smith? Seeing none, we'll open to the public. I do have two requests to speak. Richard Berg, followed by Ken Bornholt.
Supervisors, thank you for having me here today. My name is Richard Berg, and I'm one of the property owners of Cay Laguna. And I just want to indicate that in speaking for the property owners, I wish to support this resolution. And we've agreed to, Mr. Smith indicated, we've agreed to all the contingencies and including the future access to Stanton as requested by Baltigawa. I'll be much shorter than 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker is Ken Bornholt. Mr. Bornholt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the board, my name is Ken Bornholt. I'm here today on behalf of our client, Baltigawa. We support the staff report and the recommendations made to you, and we wanted to thank you for giving us time to work with Tim Smith at Public Works and Pat Foran at County Council, and through their hard work and dedication, we achieved a solution and addresses all of our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Those were my only two requests to speak. Seeing no one step forward, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board.
With that, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the resolution as recommended by the staff.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Asajjan, second by Supervisor Obit. Madam Clerk, a roll call.
Mr. Asajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Obit?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. And Mr. Hollanda, since it is Brenda Lee's birthday today, you think we can invite her down to do a joint duet with Mr. Smith before he leaves? Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Next item on your agenda is item C2. This is a hearing to consider the annual review of the public facilities fee program for 2006-2007 and a resolution amending the public facilities financing plan for unincorporated area facilities to increase the amount of public facilities fees imposed on residential and non-residential development, all districts, with recommendations for approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Ellen, are you going to start off? Ladies first, always.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chairman Linthal and members of the board. I'm Nancy Orton from the Planning and Building Department. The item we're talking about today is the annual review of the public facilities fee program for the 2006-2007 fiscal year. This report is presented to your board every year, every December. To give you, as well as our viewing audience, a brief history of the program, since 1991, the county has been collecting fees on new development, which can then be used to finance public facilities, such as fire stations, libraries, parks, and other public buildings in the unincorporated areas of the county. The fees are collected when the county issues new building permits. The annual report of how much money was collected and expended was prepared by the auditor's office. Page C28 of your staff report shows that for the 2006-2007 fiscal year, slightly more than $3 million was collected, which is about $320,000 less than last year. We expect next year's revenue to be slightly less than this year, primarily because the majority of projects that contribute to public facility fees is single-family residences, and there has been a downturn in construction activities. The last fee increase occurred almost a year and a half ago, and in order to keep pace with the cost of providing the needed facilities, we're recommending a fee increase of 3%. This reflects the Consumer Price Index, which has historically been used in increasing the public facility fees. Presuming an average size home of about 2,200 square feet, that would equate to an increase of $170 for the public facility portion of today's fees. If your board approves the increase, the new fee would become effective on February 11, 2008. The recommended action today is to approve the 2006-2007 annual report that is before you and adopt and instruct the chairman to sign the attached resolution to implement the 3% increase in public facility fees. That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions. I had asked the other agencies or departments to come on down in case you had any questions. I see that Parks is here. And admin fire. Is here, and fire.
And general services.
Thank you. Yes, general services. Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Earn, we talked yesterday about the index that's used to calculate this increase being the normal CPI, and we've heard a lot of discussion on a number of public works infrastructure projects about considerable increases in cost over recent years. And I wonder if you might relate some of the conversation we had about other possible indices we might use and at what point we really might ought to look at whether the CPI is covering the actual cost of the facilities that we seek to build with these fees.
Of course. The Consumer Price Index has been the historical method used to incrementally increase the fees. Other ways of computing an increase could be a couple of things that I'm not very familiar with. One is called RS means, which I believe is a construction type of indicator. The other is engineering records review, which again relates to public works projects. We could work with the administrative office and with county council in the next year to see if a different index would be more appropriate.
And I should emphasize, I realize that fees on building various structures in this county have increased dramatically, reflecting the increased cost. We're sort of caught here, but I think the public facility fee program is important. It provides things we need in this county as we accommodate increased development. And I would hope I might get the consensus of my colleagues to have planning study to be sure that our program is indexed properly so that we can accomplish what we set out to do.
Supervisor Assange.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is not the proper time to bring this up because I will be revisiting this issue at a later date. As I shared with staff yesterday, I want to publicly share my growing concerns about public facility fees as how we collect it and where we spend it. I know the state law does give us the discretion under the definition of public facility, but my concern is that where the growth is taking place, where the public facilities are generated, the needs are within those communities, and I want to alert everybody that I'm very concerned as where we spend it, how we spend it. We had to revisit Quimby fees, and we brought judgment to those Quimby fees as we're on the right track as we speak. And just to alert you that I am concerned about public facility fees as they are now. Thank you.
Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Both Supervisor Gibson and Supervisor Assagian raised very good points, and I appreciate that fact, and I want to support. Oops, here we go again. I'll get the light thing sorted out by the end of the day, I'm sure.
on is on now instead of on is off, or off is on, however that works. I'll start over. I appreciate the points that Supervisor Gibson and Supervisor Asajian raised regarding public facilities fee. Until we raise those fees at an equal level as the actual cost, we simply get further behind and make it more difficult to provide the facilities that are needed. And so I do support the idea of staff looking for another index to use that is more equal to the actual cost of increase than the CPI. And also I think that we always should look for a nexus in where we're providing the facilities relative to the growth that occurs in areas and where the fees are collected. And we've had that discussion regarding Quimby, and we recognize the fact that it's impossible to always make that one-to-one relationship, because some areas of the community that are small and where a lot of growth doesn't occur, they would never get facilities unless we were able to share some of the burden with the larger communities. So there's not always a one-to-one nexus, but I do think that we ought to consider that issue when we're allocating funds.
Supervisor Ovid?
Yeah, I was just going to bring up the fact that be careful in talking about what these fees are used for, because this is under AB 1600, and you can only collect these fees for those areas in which we can substantiate the growth impacts. It cannot go back and fix old problems. And I think that's one thing that people misunderstand about this, is that we're not going back and buying something that was in default or deficit before. Second is, I always caution this issue about where you spend the money, because when you went through this, or when we went through this process, and having been involved in it, in fact, actually having recommended starting this thing, AB 1600 is very clear that you have to show nexus. And the words used here very, very openly. And I want to say this much, is that some of these various departments, like fire, like parks, basically show the nexus as a countywide benefit. And when you start dealing with, well, we better spend it where the money's being raised, I will also refer you to the chart in here that shows you most of the development in this county, even though it's still very slow, is still in North County by numbers. Now, what does that mean? That's fine. I could make the same argument. We need to spend more in North County with growth going on. I've heard this before. I just caution you before you start stepping into these things, like the issue I have with roads is we use the Caltrans index, I think it is. Excuse me if I say it right. But what happens is now we get these 25 and 30% increases, and last year it was a 2 or 3% increase, when all of a sudden it's not equal to what's really happening out there. I think the reason we use the consumer price index is because it's been consistent, it's solid, and it has kept up. It has kept the fees up, but we're getting to a point now, too, where when we start adding these things cumulatively, total fees, we're starting to drive the market in terms of what you can build and cannot build, or who's going to get into it. And I say these things to caution, because we've been involved in this fee program for well over 16 years. It's been beneficial. We've been able to use this money. We've been able to capture it in terms of financing projects ahead of schedule, which is, I think, one of the better parts of the programs. So I just want you to be careful before you start sticking into these things and start playing with it, because it has worked very well, and it has kept up with what it was set up to do.
If there's no other, Supervisor Gibson, do you want to add on that?
I just responded.
Microphone, sir.
I appreciate Supervisor Ovid's comments. I think my interest here is to have staff review that with the various departments that use these fees, because I think we do have a balancing act to play here. We always have to deal with nexus in this sort of thing. That's been well established. But I think, as I understand from Ms. Orton, we're due for a 5-year review in the next cycle here, or a more comprehensive review. And I think at that point, it might be well to go back and have a look at history, be sure that we are accomplishing the goals of the program. That's really where I'm focused here. Thank you, sir.
There's no other questions for Ms. Orton. We'll open to the public. I did not receive any requests to speak. Is there anyone wishing to comment on this item? Seeing no one step forward, we'll close public comment. Back to the board for a motion or further discussion.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Owett and an exact tie by the second. Madam Clerk, could you can you be the tiebreaker on that? I heard in each year. I heard at the same time. I heard Supervisor Patterson and Supervisor Gibson.
So it's Supervisor Gibson.
Oh, Supervisor Gibson? Okay. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Owett.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Shajian.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Linthal.
Aye. With that, since we're a few minutes ahead of schedule, we're going to take a 10-minute break.
Ruin it. And the next.
We've got to keep your record rolling.
All those that are alive, please. Madam Clerk, thank you. Would you introduce the next item, please?
Next item is item C3. This is a hearing to consider a resolution amending the Urban County of San Luis Obispo program year 2005, 2006, and 2007 action plans by reallocating community development block grant funds all districts. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Sorry, are you going to do it from the podium or do you want to sit up here and have a comfortable chair?
Is this fine, this podium?
Whatever works best for you.
Okay. Suzanne Adai, Planning and Building Department staff. Good morning, Chairman Lentol and the members of the board. I'm here to present reallocation plans for the community development block grants for the city of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. And the city of Arroyo Grande would like to reallocate $33,000 in CDBG funds from facade improvements project to two new projects, which is the Recycle Center and the Architectural Barrier Removal Projects. And then the city of Grover Beach would like to reallocate $144,000 in CDBG funds from a remaining balance for a project called Mentone Avenue Storm Drainage Project, and they would like to reallocate it to another project, which is Architectural Barrier Removal Project. And staff recommends your board to approve these reallocation plans for the city of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. And this is to meet the CDBG timeliness expenditures that is required by HUD. This ends my staff report, and I'd be more than delighted to answer any questions.
Suzanne, I see no lights on, so I think you pretty much covered everything. We'll take this opportunity to open to the public. I did not receive any requests to speak. Anyone wishing to comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and move it back here.
Move staff's recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Moved by Supervisor Asajian, seconded by Supervisor Ovett. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovett?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Thank you.
Next item on your agenda is item C4. This is a hearing to consider, one, a request by JH Land Partnership Busick for approval of a vesting tentative tract map at 1789 to subdivide an existing 47.54-acre parcel into 16 lots of 2.0 to 5.29 acres in size for the purpose of sale and or development located at the northwestern terminus of Coast View Drive, south of Arroyo Grande, in the residential suburban land use category, and two, certification of the final environmental impact report for its district. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign, and that's going to change.
Mr. Dahl, I hope you're not planning on going over all three of those binders under your arm here.
Mr. Chairman, John Nall, Department of Planning and Building. We have a request today to continue this item. A couple of different reasons. The applicant is looking to work out some access issues. And so staff is recommending a continuance.
Okay.
Two.
Supervisor Asajj? Mr. Noel, is this to be continued to a time certain?
It would be helpful if we continued it to a date certain. Next time we have 60 minutes on the agenda, I believe, might be March.
Hang on.
March 4th.
March 4th.
Okay. When we come back, I'll make that part of my motion to include that date certain. Thank you.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One is the staff report.
Can I close that door? Thank you.
To a Planning Commission action sometime in the past, in the early 90s, I do believe. And I saw no reference to any Planning Commission action after that. And I'm curious to know if this will actually go back to the Planning Commission at some point for their evaluation. I know they typically review environmental impact reports. That's question number one. And question number two, we received a copy of a letter from Caltrans responding to the EIR, which is typically done earlier than when it's final, so their comments can be incorporated into the final EIR. And they raised some concerns, and I'm curious to know how those concerns will be incorporated into the findings or into the EIR in the future.
Supervisor Patterson, I'll take the second question first. We just received that letter this morning also. And so we have a plan of attack to try to resolve that issue. But obviously we haven't had the ability to start resolving that. So there's two things going on. One is the issue of this gate that allows secondary access through Falcon Ridge. The configuration of that gate, what type of gate, may be the solution to this Caltrans problem, we think, at this point, although it's still early. There are a couple of different ways to approach this issue, and we're going to be doing that between now and when we come back to your board. We think we can resolve it between now and March.
Okay. And
first, the first question that you asked was, does it go back to the Planning Commission? No, it will not. What happened with this particular project way back when was the Planning Commission approved it with a negative declaration, and that decision was appealed to the Board of Supervisors, the then Board of Supervisors, and that board, on the appeal, they decided to require an environmental impact report. And so because of the sequence of events, the EIR is now complete. We're bringing it back to your board for consideration. It will not go to the Planning Commission.
Okay, and then the one question I didn't ask that I'll ask now is regarding water source. And I noticed in the EIR it just speaks to a community water supply. And since this project was proposed, we have, as a board, implemented some policies to deal specifically with water in that region. And I'm curious to know how, you know, our current policies will integrate with this proposal, or if they will, if you could speak to that.
How about if I do this? How about if we take that under consideration and we give you a detailed response when we bring the project back in March? Would that be fair?
That works for me. Yes.
Okay. That'd probably be the
Those are my
best
questions.
Way to go.
Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Nall, I had one other request for information to come back when it does return, and that is apparently access to this project is a significant issue, and one of the, I guess you might even call it a mitigation, was the extension of a road down to Valley Road. And I did a quick site tour Sunday of this, and comparing to the notes, there's no indication of that road in the staff report. I just received the actual EIR yesterday and actually haven't had a chance to review it. So this continuance will help me in that. But the request is that when this comes back that we get the full rundown on what exactly is going on with that road. And my question there is that that road seems to have been dealt with by the city of Arroyo Grande under a separate environmental document, and I don't quite understand how that relates. I would have expected, it seems to me, that based on what I read here, that that road is part of this project, and so I'm a little confused as to how that works, that we have a wholly separate process dealing with a road that's part of this. A
brief response, Supervisor Gibson, that section of road is within the city limits, and so the city really has jurisdiction. Right. They're their own lead agency when it comes to that sort of a project, and what they did was they prepared a mitigated negative declaration for that road. We made sure that we put all of that information into the EIR, so the negative declaration is incorporated into the EIR.
Is there MOU in there as well? You're dealing with an MOU.
Shauna, do you know if the MOU is in the environmental impact report?
I believe it's not in the... No, Shauna's got more group on behalf of the county staff.
Your microphone, please.
Is the green light on?
Green, there you go.
Sorry. Shauna Scott, Morrow Group, on behalf of county staff. The MOU is in the county file. It is not included in the EIR.
We can certainly, though, make that an attachment to the staff report when we bring it back.
It's important to me, and again, if that road is essentially a condition of this permit, it has apparently impacts that have been mitigated through, you know,
That's correct.
I want to see the whole of this is what I'm asking for.
Good comment.
Supervisor Asagio?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of comments. Valley Road, going back to Valley Road, it is a road within the city of Arroyo Grande. The reason that it has taken us so long to come back to this board with the findings because of city of Arroyo Grande's involvement into the project, and then both applicant and staff and the city chose to have that solution in place prior to it coming back to us. I'm concerned that Caltrans is concerned because now the main traffic goes to Valley Road and not like it was designed to go through Falcon Ridge and get on Highway 101. And
Cacho,
there were less concerns there, and I don't know where the concern is coming from.
Yeah, Cacho, we're concerned also because this was not what we had worked out with Caltrans through the EIR process. And we're doubly concerned because we're getting hit at the 11th hour. But as I said earlier, I think we can work it out. It really has to do with the gate that separates the proposed project from Falcon Ridge Estates. If a car goes out that gate, it can use El Campo. That's Caltrans's concern. They don't want any traffic to go down to that intersection. But there are, we did come up with some solutions this morning that we're going to run by both Cal Fire and Caltrans to see if we can solve this late-breaking problem.
Thank you.
What? Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you. There's one other piece of information. Is this project itself actually contiguous to the city limits?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Is it within their sphere of influence?
Shauna, do you know that?
During the EIR process, we actually consulted with the city because one of the issues the Planning Commission raised back in 1993 was annexation into the city, and they're not considering that parcel for annexation.
Well, if I may interrupt you for a second, sure. I don't know if they can consider for annexation because you have the school in between this property and the school and the city's boundaries. Mm-hmm. So be Live Rock. And school did come into the picture with redoing of their properties going through general plan amendments with the blessing of the city. So the school is in the picture of this project, but just to give you a picture that this property separated from the city with a school site. And is the entire school site within the city?
I believe the entire school site.
I guess,
okay.
Again, another piling on request, just a discussion of the issues of annexation, because this seems like urban development, that getting community water, community sewer, you know, why is this not being annexed to the city of Arroyo Grande?
Although it is a fairly large lot. But comment noted.
And about the last time the city was discussing their general plan, it was their choice from further north of them coming closer to Highway 227. They got rid of what was considered under their sphere of influence. At the same time, the decision was made not to annex anything else except the church that's on
the name of the road, it escapes me, with the exception of that one church location, that they were not interested to annex anything else within the city or to the city of Randy. This is information that I know that I'm sure yep. staff will come back to respond sure. to your to okay. you in more details.
Thank you.
Okay. Sounds like there's a lot of information that's going to come back. I did not receive any requests to speak. Is there anyone from the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing no one, we'll close public comment, bring back to the board.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that we continue this item to date certain, and Madam Clerk.
March 4th.
March 4th.
Thank you.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Esiason, seconded by Supervisor Gibson. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Esiason.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Lindthal?
Aye. That brings us on to closed session items. Well, Mr. Cash, did you want to comment before I talk about public comments for this? I received no request to speak on closed session items.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wyatt Cash from the County Council's office. Your board's about to go into closed session on items listed on the agenda.
Is there anyone wishing to step forward on any items in closed session? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, and we'll be adjourned until 2 o'clock.
Ooh. Yeah.
Somebody said it couldn't be done.
Hey,
going upstairs.
Why? Have a big yes. ticket item.
Place. That helps. Okay, we can come back to order. Mr. Jensen, would you please report out a closed session for us?
Yes.
I don't think your button's pushed, so remember you got to have the light on means it's working now. It's just the opposite of what it used to be, Warren.
Oh, okay. Is that working
now? No.
No? How about that?
There we are.
Okay. Yes, the board did meet in closed session on some of the items listed on the agenda. It took no final action that needs to be reported, so that's the end of our report.
Thank you, sir. Supervisor, you couldn't even say it any better.
I could have with an accent.
With an accent. Okay. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
The next item on your agenda is item D1. It's an update on the Los Osos Wastewater Treatment Project in the 2nd District.
John, you want to lead off?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works.
Push that shotgun mic just a little bit toward you, because I want to make sure everybody can hear.
You can't touch it. Speak louder.
Okay. Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works. I have a very brief update for you this afternoon. Let your board know that the project team is continuing with work on numerous technical memorandums to address various components of the project and support the development of the upcoming environmental impact report. Also note that the scoping process for the EIR is ongoing. The notice of preparation is on the street and posted on the website. We're requesting that other public agencies involved in the project submit their comments to us. I also want to mention that the EIR scoping meeting is still scheduled for December 18th at the South Bay Community Center from 7 to 9 p.m. I encourage everyone who has questions or comments about what should be in the EIR to either attend that meeting or email their comments to the project's email address, which is on the website. Also wanted to mention that we're hearing lately a lot of comments about the idea of a green sewer, meaning a wastewater project that takes advantage of modern technology and reduces its footprint and impacts. And I would direct folks and encourage folks to look at the notice of preparation that is on the website, and particularly areas where we're talking about various alternative component analysis, looking at issues like regional sludge or on-site alternatives, also important issues like energy and consistency with Assembly Bill 32, which is the greenhouse gas emissions, carbon footprint, global warming concerns, and also impacts on the State Marine Reserve at Morro Bay. And encourage folks to look at those sections, give us their comments and ideas for what we could include there to make this a complete document. That concludes my update.
Thank you. Any questions from board members or Mr. Hutchinson? Okay, we'll move on to public comment. I have received a request to slip. Is there anybody else want to step forward? Because if it goes over 10, I'm going to have to reduce the time here because we want to make sure we comply with a half hour of public comment. So I've got 8. Do I have 9 and 10? Then everybody can get 3 minutes. If a bunch of people are going to submit slips at the last minute, it's not going to work well for us.
Mine's on C6, so don't count it.
I got it right this afternoon, Eric. They didn't stick together. It's right where it's supposed to be. Mr. Markson, are you going to submit that? Two more? What are we doing? They allow in the holiday spirit. If there's only two extra, we'll give everybody the full 3 minutes. If it looked like it was going to drag on and on, it was going to have to. So if you don't need to use the full 3 minutes, please don't feel that you need to use up every second of that time. First speaker is Gwen Taylor, followed by Bill Moylan.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I'm here once again to discuss water, water, water. It sounds like I'm a record, and I am. One of the things that continues to be on closed session is the Los Osos Community Services District Plus versus Golden State Water Company. My question is there an interlocutory agreement? And if so, when are they, the purveyors, going to get together so that they can determine how they are going to get the water out to the community and put a hold on any further development or projects that take the water out of our basin, out of our water supply that we are very limited on? This is an article that was written by David Sneed, July 20th, 2005. Drinking water may be Los Osos' next headache. Drinking water aquifers beneath Los Osos are so depleted that the community may face growth restrictions even after a controversial sewer project is built. Please put a halt on any further development until such a time as there is a handle on the amount of water that is being used out of our basin. To allow continued development is not in the best interest of our community or of the county. For the whole county, not just our county, but the state, is having problems with water. Water is becoming more finite, more of a problem, and must be addressed not in the future, but immediately. And this has been put off since 1978, in which Protopapas, your engineer, stated that there were problems with water in our area. That's not my made-up assumption. That is a fact. Please do something and have the purveyors get together and start their process, not tomorrow, not next week, but immediately. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker is Bill Moylan, followed by Beverly DeWitt Moylan.
My wife couldn't make it today. If possible, I have just at 3 minutes, it might be 3 minutes and 15 seconds, if I can include some of her comments, but that's entirely up to you.
I'll give you about 3 minutes and 15 seconds just
great,
because I have today
I
in the holiday spirit, and that does all you get. Okay.
Thank you very much. My name is William Moylan. I'm from Los Osos, and I'm here today to reiterate what has been said before about the RWQCB, but I strongly believe that it needs to be reiterated. The Water Board has selectively given enforcement orders to 38 households. The RWQCB continues to hold us enforcement recipients hostage for the rest of the community of Los Osos to look at as a reminder of what might happen to them if a wastewater project does not move along as rapidly as the Water Board sees fit. This is reprehensible behavior. For the Water Board or any government entity to single out 1% of a community to achieve their goals is despicable. We 38 households are being held responsible for a project that is clearly in the hands of the county. It was in the hands of the county almost two decades before it was put in the hands of the Los Osos CSD, and is now back in the county's hands. No individual should be held responsible for the infrastructure that only a government can build, and yet we are being held responsible. It is time for the county to take a firmer stance on this predicament. It is time for the county, and particularly Mr. Gibson, who represents the community of Los Osos, to speak out loudly and with conviction against this immoral action of the Water Board. Stand up for your constituents. Pressure the Water Board to vacate these CDOs and CAOs, and do not let up until they do so. My wife couldn't be here today, but I'm going to read a portion of her words to you that she spoke to the Water Board last Friday. None of you has any idea what it is like to be us. None of you has any idea what it is like to come home to a hysterical phone message from an 80-year-old CDO co-defendant saying, "I can't take it anymore, I'm going to kill myself." This really did happen. I had to rush over there. You have no idea what it is like to be us, and so you can make jokes. This is directed at the Water Board. You can make jokes or tolerate jokes about our lives and deceive yourselves into believing that the CDOs are not burdensome. In fact, the human cost has been and continues to be incalculable. By deciding not to vacate these CDOs, but instead to consider further individual enforcement, you continue to fail in your obligation to protect the people. Holding citizens accountable for failures of government is irresponsible and unconscionable. The first obligation of government is to protect our people. Now, at a former meeting, a hearing, a Mr. Jeffries, or perhaps a Dr. Jeffries, was asked if he had read the transcript of the former meeting because he was absent. He said he couldn't because his wife had the DVD, so he had to read it during Deal or No Deal. This got a lot of guffaws from the Water Board. But I want you to know the transcript and meeting he referred to contained evidence of extreme hardship and duress endured by the CDO defendants.
Mr. Rowland, I mean, I'm going to give you 15 seconds, but I'm counting right now, okay?
Fine. The board has, as a body, tolerated his jokes. It exemplifies their chilling detachment from, their wanton disregard for, and their inability to comprehend the effect of these actions on the Los Osos 45 and failing repeatedly over months and months to vacate the cease and desist orders. Despite evidence that recipients had complied with the orders, despite the orders having achieved the stated goal of
Unfortunately, his time is up, but thank you for your comments.
Okay.
Next speaker is David Dugan, followed by Piper Riley.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos, I'd just like to point out that we're probably not going to get any help from our district supervisor. The way that Bruce Gibson left the meeting as fast as he could before public comment at the regional board, you would think that there was a pack of dogs after him. I think he believes that the status quo is good enough, and I think this is going to come haunt him next election cycle, especially with all the video that I have accumulated on that fact. I have here Assembly Bill number 1812, a signing letter from the Governor Pete Wilson. This bill would appropriate monies for the general fund to the San Joaquin Area Flood Control Agency for the Stockton Metropolis Area Flood Control Bridge Project in the San Luis Obispo County for house laterals and infrastructure improvements. I'm going to go down to the second section here. It says, I am deleting Section 2 of this bill. This section would have used public monies to fund improvements on private property for house laterals for connection to a sewer system. In 1998, this money was $15 million to be appropriated to Los Osos. And I'm trying to figure out what fool would say, let's go ahead and spend public monies on for private property. The infrastructure. I would like this agency to look into the fact that $15 million was going to be put towards the wastewater project. Unfortunately, it was for the wrong part of it. It was doomed to failure. And that if we could try again for $15 million or more dollars, that perhaps we could put this money towards infrastructure, the actual project, and perhaps it'll go through or not. I don't know. There's $6.5 million being argued order for the SRF fund. But this is the county projects and not the CSD's project. And I don't know how that's going to fare. But I do know that with the $35 million from federal monies and perhaps $15 or plus million from the state, that we will put a huge chunk, take a huge chunk out of the cost of this project, regardless of what it is, regardless of where it goes, or the technologies, and that it'll go a long ways to helping the disadvantage of the district, second district, Mr. Gibson, the people you're supposed to be looking out for. And I'm going to say it again, that you should be standing behind the CDO holders and asking the regional board to vacate those violations, those enforcement orders. They serve no purpose. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Piper Riley, followed by Ben DeFatta.
Good afternoon. Piper Riley, Los Osos. In thinking about what I wanted to express today, one word came to mind, and that was absurd. Its definition is utterly or obviously senseless, contrary to all reason and common sense. Chairman Young of the RWQCB said that we are going to teach Los Osos how to vote and sent us all out, in one form or another, notices of violation based upon fraudulent evidence. We would be found guilty and fined out of existence if we did not vote the right way. This, in America, is what you are calling a fair vote. That's absurd. Absurd is that in order for us to have a sustainable and affordable system installed in Los Osos, many people who are in this room have been fighting for decades. These intelligent, altruistic people have spent tens of thousands of hours making sure that the right thing gets done, and they are still in the fight because local government agencies are living up to their colorful reputation and are following the lead of a wealthy minority. Mr. Wydell has sincerely stated that the review of the EIR reports will be a time to truly compare the systems, and I think that he honestly believes in this objectivity. Here's the absurd part. Mr. Ogren has explained to us that the county will be choosing a system based upon an equation that the county will be creating, which will include any number of overriding considerations. This is not objective. Using this approach, the county can justify their choice no matter how absurd it is. But the most absurd part of all is that the proposed gravity system and the Tri-W site are still not off the table. We keep asking why. Not getting a response, this is what I see. A minority group with a majority of money wants to clear out our town in order to build their own exclusive enclave, and it can be easily achieved by creating a disaster economy. Examples of disaster economies are New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina or Avila with the oil spill. Everyone has got to get out, and then they rebuild, and the only way... And they rebuild in a way that only the rich can move back in. Unfortunately, our last earthquake wasn't big enough, and a tsunami hasn't hit us yet to achieve this end, but a gravity system sure would work. You use Los Osos' 218 money to put in a system that will environmentally and economically devastate our town, ensuring that only the rich survive, and then you can use county taxpayer funds to clean up the remaining mess. Without a doubt, this is immoral, and because this planned environmental catastrophe is premeditated and self-inflicted, it should be illegal. Please stop playing dirty pool. In this time of global environmental crisis, it cannot be tolerated. Our Los Osos Green Team is tired, but we are getting new players every day. There are more of us watching even more closely. As we have said many times before, we want to work with you for a sustainable and affordable system. Gentlemen, we all want a green Christmas. Since the citizens of Los Osos' Prohibition Zone are paying for it, please work with us to achieve this end because it is the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Ben DeFatta, followed by Gail McPherson.
Supervisors, Ben DeFatta here. As your Christmas spirit validate parking tickets.
I'm not qualified to validate parking tickets, Mr. DeFatta, but
we all want clean water, but we want you to pick a solution to this problem that's affordable and compliant. There the dilemma lies. The Dreamers want a non-compliant and non-affordable gravity plant at the Tri-W site located in the middle of town that is very expensive. PO's decentralized system is slightly cheaper. The Ripley Pacific Substatic plant is half the cost of the Dreamers Tri-W plan. They were digging up the streets and so forth. Mr. Murphy's reclamator on-site plan, even cheaper, qualifies for federal grants that would let us get it for only a tenth of the cost of the proposed county mystery plant. No pipes, no digging up the streets. Saves the bay, meets drinking water standards, can start tomorrow. He intends to make a Los Osos a model for the rest of the state. What's so hard about choosing one of those plans? All four give you clean water, and we find the last two plans affordable. And it appears you want to continue with another study for Los Osos at a cost of another $2-3 million. Los Osos has been studied over and over to the tune of over $30 million already, usually by the same people that did it before. The Ripley Pacific study is the most updated study we have, and I believe you're looking at the recommended plan as we speak. It appears now the federal government will probably have a say in what's built near this bay. I'm sure they don't want a conventional leaking sewer nearby. And the Dreamers, also known as the Coast Keeper, who still wants the plant there, is puzzling to us. And I'm sure the governor doesn't want a stinking energy hog conventional sewer plant there, too. He is on a crusade for California to go green from now on, and I think the only way we're going to get it right is to fire Mr. Briggs and his merry men on the water board to stop this waterboarding our citizens. Mr. Young let the cat out of the bag last Friday, saying he would not rescind the CDOs, thus keeping the pressure on the citizens so they will not be able to derail the Tri-W project. You're all public servants. You're supposed to protect the people, not drive them out of their homes. If the water board is so insistent for a sewer they want, then they should pay for it. If it's over $100 a month, we can't afford it. Now, the 218 vote was under duress, and you shouldn't be going around bragging about it. So let's get it right the first time.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Gail McPherson, followed by Dr. Mary Fullwood.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairman Linthal, supervisors, county staff. My name is Gail McPherson. I first wish to thank your staff, Public Works Director Pablo Ogren and Supervisor Gibson, for their joint presentation on September 7th and also a follow-up with the Water Board with a short presentation on December 7th. The citizens of the county and the residents and taxpayers of Los Osos can view the one-and-a-half-hour meeting from last Friday that was videotaped and available only because Pavo and the Los Osos CSD General Manager John Shemp agreed to cover the expense. The item scheduled for 1:30 was not heard until nearly 5 o'clock and provides some praise for your ability, Mr. Linthal, to keep these items on schedule and orderly. Both presentations are at www.slowspan.com and at pzldf.org. I strongly recommend the September 7th project update is viewed by each of you and shown on both 20 and 21, as it contains important information and details of the due diligence review, the affordability analysis, sustainability criteria, and the economic impacts analysis for which your board adopted. This is a subject of continued request and long sought by the community. I would like to suggest that the county direct the TAC to revisit their mission as they have been extended in both time and reach from their original commitment. Renaming the public outreach group more appropriately, a community advisory work group, more accurately describes their next phase and their core competencies. I make strong recommendations for the county to reconsider reviewing the TAC participants for any conflict of interest that exists or may occur in the near future, such as running for office or working on projects or with entities in conjunction with a related wastewater project. The need to review the community proposals presented by the citizens that have happened over the last summer and to establish criteria based on community values is critical for the next phase. This must be established and reviewed to assure the needs are covered in this next most important evaluation process. The ability to deliver the best value project is based on a fair process with checks and balances in place to assure accountability and independent third-party review. This process is part of all quality assurance, quality control, and an absolute must to build public trust. Please direct your staff to assure a credible and robust process by implementing these recommendations and move forward with an effective due diligence phase, an energized team that represents the needs and values of the community, which is a high priority for a new community advisory work group. And I just have a couple of handouts. And one of them has to do with the lawsuit, the appeal for the CDOs. And we really hope that you will continue to jump in and defend the community until the water bore is on your doorstep after you guys, because that'll be next, I'm afraid. So I'll give you these, and thank you for your time.
You can just leave them all there. You can pass them all down. You'll pass them all down. Saves you the step. Thank you for your comments, and I just want to assure you and also the people that are listening and watching that I do my absolute best to keep these meetings focused, structured, and on time. Oftentimes, it's very difficult to do that. Next speaker is Dr. Mary Fullwood, followed by Bruce Payne.
Hello, my name is Dr. Mary Fullwood, speaking as a resident of Los Osos. To prepare a research proposal, one first begins by imagining forward the goal and ruling out confounding variables, those details that would hinder or contaminate results. This said, I ask you, the county, to make your first priority the research into the center of town as a sewer location, and if it can be ruled out for good as a confounding variable. Our center may not be as developed at this point in time as the centers of other towns in our county, but we have the right to protect our cultural center, the location equivalent to next to the Mission in San Luis Obispo, library in Paso Robles, or movie theater in Morro Bay. Not only is this location the center of our town and the gateway to Montaña de Oro, it is also the location an East Coast colleague described as the easy skateboard ride down to the bay. With the bay's new designation as State Marine Reserve, the California Department of Fish and Game has written a 2007 master plan for marine protected areas stating, take is not limited to fishing activities. The high level of protection created by a SMR is based on the assumption that no other appreciable level of take or alteration of the ecosystem is allowed, e.g. sewage discharge. Additionally, Project Director Ogren expressed to the Water Board in July 2007 that when a sewer plant goes upside down, because they all do at some point, one wants to have selected a site that has the best facilities for containment of a potential spill. All of these concerns warrant the site's evaluation in order to see if it can be ruled out now, removing this problematic confounding variable from the equation so we can effectively reach our desired outcome of a sewer for which we can all be proud. Recently, the Water Board expressed their unwillingness to rescind active enforcement orders on individuals after saying they would do so upon the passage of the 218. Their reasoning was they are afraid that if a project needed to be in the center of town, our community might try to block it again. You, the county, have the ability to restore peace to our community by expeditiously researching whether it is feasible to have the center as a viable location under the new knowledge that the bay as State Marine Reserve and the serious environmental issues of climate change, sea level rise, and need for reductions in carbon footprints, etc. Please make this your first priority because it is the key to healing our community, restoring peace, and moving forward towards a wonderful and desired outcome. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Bruce Payne, followed by Chris Albee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Board, people here and at home. My name is Bruce Payne. I'm a resident of Los Osos. Bruce Gibson and Pablo Ogren were at the Watsonville meeting when I told the Board of Water Quality Control Board that I would do everything in my power to stop a 218 vote if Tri-W was still on the table. I still have that goal. I thought I really felt I didn't have to work too hard at stopping a 218 vote when I looked at the ballot and saw how illegal it was and it didn't cover all of the cost. I felt it was an insult to the people of Los Osos to ask them to vote yes on a ballot like that. Evidently, they were too afraid not to. People want a green sewer, yeah, that was mentioned, and also timing was mentioned. Those two things would both be handled with the reclamator, which have any of you read Title 33, Chapter 26. It says, if it can be handled, if pollution can be dealt with at the source, it is illegal to transport it. It makes any collection system illegal. So all the time spent looking at the fine screening report for step or gravity and arguing whether effluent was as polluting as raw sewage, which to me was a no-brainer. Anyway, that time's all wasted. How much of the $2 million that you spent for these studies is left? And that's the other question I'd like to have answered. Timing. It doesn't get any faster than upgrading the septic tanks to a reclamator and recharge. There was no safe recharge mentioned of 1,200,000 gallons or whatever it's going to be. The recharge is already in place, doesn't cost a dime to put it there. It's leach fields and leach pits that were permitted. The other thing is septic tank management goes along with the reclamator. It costs $15,000 to put it in. That's cheaper than any other process you've got. And it's $45.75 a month to monitor it and upkeep, and it doesn't have to be pumped until 5 years. And the septic tank management should have been put in a long time ago. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have on a reclamator. I've been studying it.
Mr. Payne, I see no lights on for questions, so thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Next speaker is Chris Albee, followed by Chuck Sasania.
Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. Imagine yourself ready for retirement or just looking for a great place to raise your kids, and you think you've found the spot. Here it is, boy, Los Osos. What a great place to live and retire to. You don't know a septic tank from an ice cream cone, neither does your agent, and you make a big mistake. You commit the crime of buying a house. Next thing you know, your community is being accused of polluting the drinking water, and the water board is warning you to create a community service district and get going on a wastewater system, or else. CSD was formed in 1990, and the community CSD decided on a ponding system with parks, bike paths, a recharge system for the lower aquifer, everything but canoes. The CSD messed around with all this for about 3 years before we found the water board would not accept the project. Then we find out a certain faction in the community has gotten behind an obsolete gravity-style collection system complete with sludge production and removal, huge trenching problems, infrastructure problems, and water disposal, which would probably lead to imported water eventually. All this for just $168 million. What a deal. Even with an SRF loan, the interest costs were $22 million alone over 20 years. You would have to be insane to go along with a plan like this. You get all your buddies together and vote those responsible, along with their plan, out of office. Oh, and while all this is going on, there's no real problem with our water that easy wellhead treatment won't handle. This is the tip of the iceberg, but I only have 3 minutes. If your stomach isn't churning by now, let me help you along. If all this doesn't make you sick, maybe the loss of good neighbors will. Many will not be able to stay in Los Osos if they have to pay another $1,800 to $2,000 a year over and above their property taxes. No one should have to risk losing a house for a utility bill. Yes, everyone, stress can kill you, and nearly everything about this project is stressful. We're being held hostage in our own homes and getting no assistance from the regional board as required by law. Any competent physician knows that mental stress can bring on illness, physical and mental disorders, depression, and numerous other ills. The water board's handling of the Los Osos water projects has been consistently heavy-handed and conducive to fear and apprehension among the citizens of Los Osos. In particular, the holders of cease and desist orders within the community.
Mr. Albee, unfortunately, your time is up. Thank you for your comments, sir. Chuck Sasania, followed by Richard Marketson.
Good afternoon, Chairman Lenthal, fellow board members and staff. Chuck Sasania is my name. I'm the president of the Los Osos Community Services District, and it's been a while since I've been here. And I needed to take some time away after that vote. And by the way, congratulations. I'm glad that we've got that phase of our relationship behind us and we can move forward on a project now. I really hope that during the due diligence phase, we can foster our relationship because I don't want that ending in a dead end. Really don't. Obviously, our community still has some things to work out with both the Water Board and Taxpayers Watch. I can't do anything about Taxpayers Watch. They're determined to fight. The lawsuits that they've initiated continue to distract and drain our resources away from solving the problem. The Water Board, we will continue to work with because that is critical. Neither entity is going away. The struggle for us is making sure that our relationship with the Water Board doesn't wind up reflecting poorly for you. And that's the last thing I want to happen, is to make your job more difficult because of our relationship with the Water Board. And that is just something we're going to have to be on guard about, because I don't feel right leaving the citizens defenseless. The individual enforcement actions are wrong, and I'm going to continue to fight those. And be that as it may, I hope it doesn't cause you undue harm as you work through a project. I was glad to see everything that Mark said about a green project, and I'm excited about the next phase of this process, because as you know, the environmental impact report was where things went wrong last time. The discrepancy between the information in the project report and what was released to the public in the environmental impact report was a disgrace, and the community is on guard, and I know it won't happen again. I know we don't have to worry about that happening again, but the EIR is going to be very thoroughly scrutinized. I'm excited that we have opportunities to do good green things. It's a different climate now than it was 6 or 7 years ago politically, as well as in terms of the global environment. And I think there's more focus on the need to be sustainable and think about the future and not just build something because it's been done before. Again, I look forward to the due diligence process. I don't want it to end in a dead end. And I look forward to working on the EIR and reviewing it. And thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Richard Markison, followed by Lindy Owen.
Richard Margetson, I'm a little disappointed in the meetings lately that we hear nothing as far as an update on the Water Board issue. I would have liked to have heard what Mr. Gibson's feelings were of what happened Friday before public comment was given. I think all four of you should be curious of what happened. I wasn't there because I was working on the fundraiser, but I watched the rerun. And when you watch the rerun, I would have loved to have gone after Leon Golden gave his public comment. You know, Chairman Young, all of a sudden, due process is at the head, forefront. There hasn't been due process in this whole fiasco since 2005. Now all of a sudden it rears its head. Now due process is what we have to follow. It's been 2 years. You know, if this was Washington, there'd be a congressional investigation. There's reasons that people are not working at their positions at the Water Board anymore on the Los Osos issue. I've brought a couple of them up. There's reasons for this. There should have been an investigation into this process a whole long time ago. It's pathetic. These people work for the citizens of the state of California, the taxpayers. They're not some hierarchy above everyone else. We pay for everything they do. They're responsible to us. And the way they've behaved is abominable. And I'm talking about from the staff all the way to the board. And it's very interesting who wasn't at that board meeting the other day, because I would have loved to have heard Dr. Press's analysis of what's going on.
Thank
Switching gears a minute with my last 45 seconds, I completely understand why Tri-W has to be on the table still at this point. I actually want Tri-W on the table. I want it evaluated. I want it part of the EIR. Because I think, again, as was proven in the first EIR, Tri-W is never going to rise to the top, ever. I want that proof. I want you to provide us the proof that it wasn't the right site and it wasn't the right project. So the original five directors can stop hounding this community, some of them taxpayer watch members. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker is Lindy Owen, followed by our last speaker, Al Barrell.
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I've often felt as the 6 or 7 years that I've been involved with the sewer have moved along, and along with the Cheney-Bush administration, that there was certainly a parallel universe going on. I'm very glad to see that wrongdoing in the White House and our government is starting to be addressed and things are changing, and I hope that we can clean house and get back to the America that we all believe in. Same with Los Osos, though, and I'm hoping that if we look back at the EIR process, the location was clearly outside of town. Where did that go wrong, and how did everybody go along with it flipping into the middle of town, which was one of the lowest preferred locations? I don't know, but that's wrongdoing that happened in the past. And so to continue seeing that the things that went wrong out of the 7-year process get corrected and that the direction be corrected to an energy policy that we need to be dealing with, because our planet is changing now. We don't have time to pretend that we can do a big energy hog leaking conventional sewer plant when there's options that are so much better. One thing that I think is really wrong is this whole process. I know that government moves slowly, so forth. But, for instance, the $6.5 million, that was stopped by the state. That loan that was, you know, that tore up the entire Esha area that the sewer location was in the middle of town. And then it was the state board that stopped that funding. And it was our prior board that made the funding go as fast as they could. They accelerated it so that we did get into this bad situation. Well, why could we not just propose that we split that down the middle? I think Los Osos would be glad to pay $3.25 million, and if the state would take the responsibility for having issued an unfunded loan. That loan should never have been issued. It should not a penny of it should have gone forward. If we could correct that level of problems and then begin to go forward and look at the best location was out of town, it continues to be the same best location. So spending money on trying to look at it in the middle of town or on the other side of town or new locations really makes no sense. It has been studied. We know a lot now. Why can we not launch from what we know to a future that actually gets us an award-winning green sewer? We deserve it in Los Osos. We've worked hard to try to make the best thing come forward. And I will continue doing it as much as I can, even though it's taken its toll on my health and my family's health. So green energy is about what we really need to be looking at, and affordability comes along with it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Our last speaker, Mr. Al Barrow.
Good afternoon, board members and public. Thank you for your talk. I listened on the radio on the way in, and it's good to hear that you're going to focus on AB 32. I would also hope that you would focus on affordability and socioeconomic impact considerations in your environmental impact studies and report. I think that's very important. And I think once you've defined the needs of the public, you will find you will qualify for more grant money and more support from federal and state offices. And I know you haven't decided to take the project yet. Mr. Moylan is incorrect in that, and that won't take place for a while. The second thing I want to talk about is I got a knock on my door. It was a wake-up call Sunday afternoon with a notice that my rent was going to go up $200 a month. I'm a disabled veteran with a $900 a month income. So that's going to be a big impact, and I don't know if I can stay in my housing or not. So that's a problem for me. There are other people out there. We know that maybe one-third of the population is in that kind of risk zone of not being able to come up with more money. And it's not a mean landlord or anything like that. It's just market-driven forces have forced rents up because equities are down. And that's a correlation. You talk to realtors, they'll tell you. If the market for housing is down, rentals go up because there's more demand. So I looked around where I lived before, and I noticed that $200 or $300 worth of increases has already happened in those places as well. So it's really important to think about the affordability issue. The second thing I wanted to bring up was the nexus between the people who are supporting the gravity sewer and Bruce Gibson's election. Before the election occurred in 2005, Barnard Construction donated $10,000 to the opposition. Okay? After the election, they donated $10,000 to Sam Blakeslee. Okay? So we have a lot of pressure. I'm not saying you're a bad guy or anything. I'm just saying that you have pressure from people who want the gravity sewer who helped you get elected. And last week, I did put in a public document request to council, and I haven't gotten anything back yet, but I assume in the next week, this week, you'll have something for me. So we want to try to define that and find out where we're going with this, but please do the economic, social, affordability impact. And I'd like to have an answer if that's going to be considered. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, and thank you for your service to our country. That was our last request to speak. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Or Mr. Hutchinson, did you want to elaborate?
Did you have anything to say, Mark or John?
Mark Hutchinson again. I didn't hear any specific thing that I could give a complete answer on now, except to note that social and economic impacts, although they're not directly in the center of where CEQA lands, they are important considerations as we look at alternatives and mitigation measures and the costs of those. Both CEQA and the Coastal Act talk about feasibility of alternatives, and certainly feasibility does go to economic issues. So to the extent that they are part of the scope of CEQA, they'll certainly be included.
Okay, thank you. Indeed, I think most of public comment were concerns and assertions that we have addressed many times before. I did pick up on one question I believe Mrs. Taylor asked about the interlocutory stipulated judgment, the ISJ, and next steps. I know that Public Works is in discussions with water purveyors about the water management plan that flows out of that, if you will. Excuse my choice of terminology, but I expect that to happen early in the new year, that the results of the ISJ's agreement will start to be seen. Anything you'd like to add to that, Mr. Waddell?
Well, I can add that we are meeting with the water purveyors, and you know, last week's item before your board was approval of submitting a grant request, and we have completed that application, submitted a request for $250,000 to the Department of Water Resources for development of basin management plan in cooperation with the water purveyors in Los Osos under the ISJ.
Okay. Thank you, and I would report to my colleagues that indeed last Friday the 7th, Mr. Ogren and I did attend the regional board meeting. The hearing item did start about 3 hours plus after it was scheduled, and we were able to give a brief report on largely on things the regional board already knew before having to get on to other commitments that each of us had. I would note for my colleagues' benefits that I did indicate to the board, as I have on other times, that I think it is important that the existing recipients of CDOs and settlement agreements are treated fairly as regards all other folks who reside within the prohibition zone. The staff report on this particular item did list a number of concerns, including litigation underway that caused their staff to recommend to their board that no action be taken. And as I'm sure my colleagues know, that that separation of powers will makes it clear that the decisions as regards that those enforcement actions rest solely with the regional board. Going forward, this Thursday, Pablo and I will be in Sacramento
meeting with state agency staff regarding grant funding opportunities. We continue to pursue those vigorously, and I think we expect some productive meetings on Thursday. That may cause a slight change in office hours, which are scheduled for that afternoon, in that I'm not sure that Bob and I can be back for their normal start. So the plan at this point is to have John Waddell cover office hours, 4 o'clock, this Thursday, the 13th, Sea Pines Golf Course in Los Osos. My legislative assistant, Sherry Ispero, will be there representing my office, and if Pavel and I can make it, we will. And with that, that's our week.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Gibson. Do you think it would be helpful if there was more input from this board to the regional board, from our board to the regional board regarding the CDOs? Because it is a lingering problem there. We hear about it every week. And I think, personally, that it is an injustice, and I don't see the value, frankly. And I'm curious to know if you think that we should pursue it more aggressively than just, you know, and I appreciate the fact that you made that comment mm-hmm. to them, but it doesn't seem to get a lot of traction. And I'm wondering if there's something else that we might do, because, again, without having the conversation with them, I don't know what their rationale is, but certainly I can't find any for maintaining this line of action on their part. I think it's disruptive, and I think, you know, we've done what we've said we'd do, and we're continuing to do that, and I would think that would delay their concerns somewhat.
You know, we continue to meet with regional board staff on a regular basis, Pablo and I do, and I've made it very clear to them since we took this up in May. You know, we wrote the letter in May for their May meeting indicating that, you know, future enforcement should be held in abeyance. And when they agreed to that, we had been back to their meetings in July and September and now December. And at each point, we make it very clear. I make it clear that I think fairness is a fundamental issue. So they're hearing that on a regular basis. Actually, July and September were the first opportunities that county had to appear directly before the board. They have very strict rules about not taking ex parte communications. So we only really interact with the board through our letter in May and through our appearances in July and September. I think at this point, in reading their staff report, that it's very clear that their issuance of the CDOs is being litigated right now. The Prohibition Zone Legal Defense Fund has filed suit seeking to have those orders vacated and a number of other issues. And the county is not party to that litigation. I am not familiar with that litigation beyond, you know, reading the basics of it. But it seemed very clear to me in the staff report and from what I understand from staff that no one is recommending that the board do anything about those CDOs while that litigation is still underway. That said, the actual effect of those CDOs is, I think, much more symbolic than substantive. It is unfair that a mere handful are singled out. But if you read the text of the CDO, you'll see that there is nothing active happening on them right now. So I'm hopeful that the litigation can be resolved as soon as possible and that they can come to a fair resolution with the community overall. I think it's possible they can do that because I think they are gaining confidence month by month as they see the efforts that the project team is making and the results of that overwhelming success of the 218 vote. So I think they're solid with our process, and I think that will lead them when they can or when they choose to a fair consideration of the existing CDOs.
Okay. Well, it seems to me, though, that if they withdrew the CDOs, the litigation would go away. And
I guess that's between them and their counsel. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Osagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My thoughts were such that if we were to have a resolution here with the blessing of this board, that you were able to go forward and speak on behalf of us rather than as a supervisor yourself.
Sure.
If that will strengthen.
I would certainly welcome that. I think that that's an important statement for us to make. Further strengthening, I think what I would suggest is maybe I'll in my weekly conferences with Mr. Ogren, we'll draft something up for consideration here.
If you don't have a problem with them, I would like to encourage that maybe as, I don't know if we can do it at the next meeting. We don't have enough time to notify the public, bring something back that we're agreeable, then it can go forward on behalf of the board, and you can carry it in at all times. You can say,
keep it on behalf
of the county, sure, rather than just you speaking there on behalf of your district.
That would be good. I'd appreciate that.
We'll bring it back next week, then.
Is that if possible? I don't know what.
Mr. Ogren, can you comment? Is that doable to bring back next week?
So what?
Chairman Lenthal, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Department. The agenda for next week has already been established.
You know what, and Mr. Ogren, this is a resolution that's going to take 5 minutes either to approve it or disapprove it. It's a matter of if we have the 10-day or maybe a matter of urgency for this board to say put it on the agenda. It's just a matter of a few minutes for us to move it forward. Make it happen.
You know, I think that an appropriate development of a resolution, though, should address both sides of the equation. Certainly, the challenges associated with the, as your board was reflecting in the discussions just a minute ago, the unfairness to the individual applicants out there is certainly a serious issue. On the other hand, the regional board staff report also addressed a number of issues that they think are important and that which need to be addressed in order to for their board to be able to come back into session and to consider a rescinding of the CDOs. And I think that, it's certainly my recommendation that in the development of a resolution for your board of supervisors that I need to make sure that we fairly consider all of those issues and incorporate them into the resolution. That, I think, is going to be very important in order so that the regional board can look at that resolution and know that your board has considered all the related issues in developing your recommendations to them.
Mr. Rogan, approximately how much time do you need?
Well, the challenge is that certainly it's going to take some consultation with regional board staff. I have a lunch meeting next week set up with the PISLDIF individual, so I'd like to be able to meet with them as well and discuss their perspective on the issues. But certainly the first meeting in January, the regional board is not going to be meeting before then, and so we can have that resolution done in a timely manner before the next regional board meeting, and I will also have an opportunity to talk with all the parties before developing that resolution.
Supervisor Patterson.
Okay. Mr. Ogren, does the board, regional board, typically meet on the first Friday? Well, we will not meet until the 8th, and I'm wondering if they meet on the first Friday, we won't
lose an opportunity.
Have an opportunity at least to present something at their January meeting if they do meet on.
I don't think there is a January.
Well, let me if I could, I think that the general issue there is I did not hear the final action or the final discussion at the regional board, but as of the time that I left the meeting, staff's recommendation to their board was no further action for the time being. I think that given the timing of the work efforts of the project team and the meeting schedule of the regional board, if we accomplish that resolution in January in a well thought out manner, I think we would be right in the timeline that would work well. So I support what Mr. Ogren is saying about consulting the parties involved and getting it right when we put it forward.
Okay. I do think that the message is clear, though, that we would like to pursue that as soon as possible.
Supervisor Recession?
Well, if us for the light before this last comment was made, then, but even though discussions are between staff or among staff members, there got to be some communications as what's coming from this board, and we trust your judgment when you conduct business with them, but our voice has got to be heard through you at the level that we have agreed upon here, and their board need to hear that this board has concerns or given some directions as how we feel.
You know, and so again, I can commit that we can get that resolution to your board first week in January, and that does give us the opportunity to make sure that we get it done right and addressing the issues of the various parties that are involved. And
Mr. Rogan, I think if I may, it would be the second week in January, not the first week.
January 8th.
Supervisor Gibson.
Yes. I think that covers it. I think that's a good plan, and would recommend we move forward on that basis.
Supervisor, did you cancel your?
Well, Mr. Markinson said that there's no meeting the regional board in January.
Anyway, so in all deference to what's going on, I think when we put this resolution together, it would be nice to have one that has a little bit of thought and meat into it instead of hurrying to try to satisfy
an immediate issue. Agreed. I think it. I think the thought we put into the letter in May produced good results, and so I think comparable thought into this is well spent.
There's no action required on this today. I also wanted to thank those in public comment because of their brevity and civility. We were able to get four extra speakers, and I do appreciate that. And we only stayed over 10 minutes, so I appreciate your cooperation. With that, Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Next item on your agenda is item C5. This is a hearing to consider an ordinance amending Title 19 of the County Code, adopting the latest additions of the construction codes with local amendments to the reference codes, all districts. This item was introduced on November 27, 2007. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Ms. Journey, are you going to lead off while the crew is assembling?
Sure. Or you want me to wait for them to settle down here? No, I'm good. Thanks. Appreciate that. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm here today for your approval of the attached ordinance to the County Code Title 19 that will adopt the 2007 edition of the California Building, Mechanical, Plumbing, Electrical, Energy, Historical, Existing Building Codes, and the 2006 edition of the International Property Maintenance Code. That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Especially after lunch.
I'd like to give you a brief thumbnail sketch of the significance of this particular adoption. The first uniform building code was published in 1927 by an organization known as the International Conference of Building Officials. At the same time, there was two other organizations commonly referred to as BOCA and the Southern Building Code Officials that also published their particular building codes. So from about 1927 to the early 1990s, there was three national or model codes that were used throughout the United States as the basis for code, state, and local adoptions for building regulations. In the early 1990s, there was a movement to consolidate all these three national codes into one building code. And so in 1994, the International Code Conference was spawned. And with that was the dissolution of the International Conference of Building Officials, BOCA, and the Southern Building. So in 2000, there was published the first edition of the International Building Code. It was also published again in 2003 and then subsequently in 2006. California, due to its legal process, has been on the 1997 Uniform Building Code, which was the last uniform code published, trying to get amendments, housing authority, state architect, fire marshal, all consolidated into a code that they could agree on. This finally happened this last year. So in January 1, 2008, we will be under a brand new code. This is fairly significant in the fact that, as I mentioned, since 1927, the Western states have been under this uniform code. So this is quite a big significant change in format, layout, an entire edition that's a volume of reference standards. Along with the abandonment of the building code, there's abandonment of code commonly called the housing code, the abatement of dangerous building codes, and those have been consolidated into some sections of the uniform building code, the international building code, and then an international existing property and maintenance code, which we're adopting. There's also a brand new chapter, if you've heard from the state fire marshal, chapter 7A, which is the wildland interface chapter, which brings together construction materials that are resistant to fire. It has some correlation with the maps that the state fire marshal is bringing out also. On a local level to us, Title 19 is bringing all these new codes into the county code. Pretty much we're not changing anything significant in the makeup of Title 19. It's almost a housekeeping effort to consolidate the format that coincided with the uniform code to the format and numbering and locations of all the sections that are now in the International Building Code. We have made some minor additions or clarifications on the time limits for applications and as-built and permits. We have taken one piece from the 1997 Uniform Building Code, and that's the appendix chapter on grading, because it is tied into the grading ordinance that's in the land use titles 22 and 23. So we have pulled one small section out of this old code to maintain consistency with those land use titles, and they're in the process of being rewritten to conform to the stormwater pollution mandates. What is not in this ordinance right now is coming to your board in January is the water conservation issues for Los Osos and Napomo and a retrofit ordinance. So that's coming separately in January, so that's not any part of this ordinance. Also, the regulations to conform to Assembly Bill 885 for the new septic regulations, those are still being reviewed by the state, so there's no inclusion of those requirements in this update. So this update is almost purely an administrative update, kind of out with the old and out with the new type of a situation. And I'm here for questions.
Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Journey, again, relative to additional amendments that may be coming forward, you spoke, well, some issues have been raised in the past regarding the percolation test.
Correct.
Perch water tables and those
Correct.
Sorts of things. And you indicated that the regional board is currently revising their basin plan.
That arrived on our desk last week.
Okay. And once you check the consistency of what we anticipate doing with their basin plan, then you can bring those changes forward. Because I understand you had some basically ready to go, but didn't include them because of the new draft basin plan.
That's entirely correct.
And you speak to that, though, relative
to... Sure. The basin plan is what governs our ability to permit and inspect conventional septic systems. The regional board holds that authority, and they have granted, through an MOU and our Title 19, the ability to inspect, permit those type of septic systems. They're revising the requirements and the monitoring and the maintenance categories and locations in this new basin plan, which we just got last week, so I can't speak exactly to the exacting requirements of it. They are very concerned with water quality. It's going to be more stringent than the original basin plan as far as allowing alternative systems and how they will allow alternative systems. There'll have to be mitigation and monitoring and testing requirements involved with those alternative systems.
But we could expect those within the year.
I'm hoping they will. I believe they're on schedule to go to public comment in May or June, which means they will have a window of time to accept those public comments and then refute them and come back out with their draft. I think they're hoping to have that approved by their state board roughly this time next year.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wonder, Ms. Journey, we had also talked in our meeting and I think at introduction about the wet season, dry season testing
Correct.
For very low production wells. And was it my understanding that you are going to bring back that as a proposal to change Title 19 to go to a wet versus dry season testing?
We are going to engage in some conversations with Environmental Health, who monitors and kind of has authority over the wells, and bring back to your board their thoughts, our thoughts, and an amendment relating to that, probably in relation to the septic, because they're kind of tied as far as groundwater separation between septic and wells and production and capacity and whatnot.
Okay, and that would be in your first set of amendments or the mid-year?
Probably mid-year.
More than mid-year.
More mid-year, okay. Definitely.
Okay, I think it's an important issue for us to address, because we have many, at least anecdotal reports of well failures out in the rural areas on some very low production wells, and I think we need to really look carefully at that to make sure we're permitting.
Oh, definitely,
I think we need to
correlate capacity, you know, wet season, dry season testing, and the capacity that you required for fire mitigation and just for domestic use.
Great, thank you.
Exactly.
Mr. Tierney, before you step down, I didn't see anybody that wanted to step forward in public comment, so I'm going to try to short-circuit this a little bit. I think in using your words, this brings a variety of codes into a more usable and friendly consolidated format. What's interesting is I probably got a half a dozen or seven calls from various people in the industry and the business thanking you for being not only easy to work with or explaining sometimes complex issues, especially since your boss is sitting out there at the department, Mr. Alanda. I just want to also add that, that you are a pleasure to work with as far as a regulation aspect like that. It's a thankless job. Nobody likes to be told they're getting red tagged or shut down or anything like that. But the fact that you're able to implement and get these changes and get people on board and that we haven't had all those complaints, I think speaks very well to your organizational ability. So I just want to publicly thank you. And your boss is nodding his head in an affirmative manner behind you over there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. These new codes are very complex for all of us. It's kind of a learning curve. We have daily conversations with local professionals. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? So it's.
And believe me, they appreciate it because when they have questions, the fact that they have a human that answers the phone or returns their phone call in a timely fashion means a lot to them. It doesn't matter if they're an architect, engineer, or whatever, because everyone's trying to understand the new codes. So I just want to again thank you.
I appreciate that.
Seeing no one step forward, we'll open and close public comment and bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the 2007 edition of the California Building, Mechanical, Plumbing, Electrical, Energy, Historical Building, and Existing Building Codes.
Second. And waive reading?
No.
Do we have to?
Please.
Please.
Just
add that in the morning.
Moved by Supervisor Esiason, read eloquently by Supervisor Esiason, and seconded by Supervisor Gibson. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Esiason?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt?
Yes.
Ms. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Yes. Mr. Trudy, thank you again. With that, we're going to take a 12-minute break.
I just thought it was we're going to have to publish that.
When I read it, it was clearly.
It was bad, bad weather.
Your worst day in Maui has been your best day here.
Like 50 to 70 mile an hour winds, torrential rainstorms, thunder, lightning. No, no, not at all.
You didn't have to spend time at Triple Hospital or anything, did you?
Yeah. We're live. Yeah. We're alive, too.
Okay, we're live and ready to come back together. Mr. Graney, would you do me a big favor and close those doors? There's nobody out there now, but I do believe there's a class that's in session and people going in and out and around the hallway. It seems like all the sound just comes right down here. Having said that, Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Next item on your agenda is item C6. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by John and Temeca Iopini of the Subdivision Review Board's denial of their request for a vesting tentative parcel map, CO04-0533, to subdivide an existing 2.48-acre parcel into two parcels of approximately 1.25 and 1.23 acres each and designate the project site as a transfer of development credit receiver site in the 5th District. This item was continued from August 21st, 2007, and there is no recommendation being made.
Ms. Cavanaugh, ladies first, and they say you're going to lead off.
Thank you, Supervisor Linthal, members of the Board of Supervisor Elizabeth Cavanaugh County Planning Staff. I'm returning here with the Iopini parcel map in South Atascadero. The site is located in South Atascadero, that is between the communities of Atascadero and Garden Farms. In August, we had an appeal hearing on this map that's before you. This was the proposed parcel that was to be divided with a 1 acre and a 1.4 acre parcel. At that hearing, the applicant submitted an alternative map. And your board instructed us to go and hear what the Subdivision Review Board and the Santa Margarita Advisory Council felt about this new map, and I'm here returning with that information. This is what the old parcel subdivision would have looked like on land. And here is the new map. As you can see, the lot is divided vertically versus horizontally. The proposed lots are 1.25 and 1.23 acres. Each lot will have its own residence based on this new subdivision. Here's what it will look like on site for you. Here's a compare and contrast of the two parcel maps. Again, the original was 1.5 acres and 1 acre lots, and now we're at 2 1 and a quarter acre lots. The previous density would have allowed 3 units. The new map will only allow 2 units. We're using a shared driveway in the new map. The Santa Margarita Advisory Council approved this new map. The building area designated for future buildings or expansion of the existing house is predominantly the same as where it was in the previous map, except it extended forward and included the existing house and ornamental landscaping. And this new map requires a waiver of the side setback of the existing house on proposed parcel 2, which has been approved by CAL FIRE.
If I may interrupt you, Mr. Chair, if I may ask a question, that is because of where the lot line adjustment is coming to near an existing structure. That's why it's requiring a waiver.
That's correct. The new lot, the vertical lot, is 20 feet from the existing structure.
Existing structure. Thank you.
The Santa Margarita Advisory Council heard this new map in October and recommended approval of the redesign map by 8-1. Then in November, we took it to the Subdivision Review Board, who recommended denial of this map, the new map, based because the findings of the original denial were still relevant to the new map. I'll just do a quick summary of the findings for denial. Neighborhood character, the Subdivision Review Board felt that the 1.25-acre parcel sizes was quite a bit smaller than the 3.8-acre average parcel size that surround the lot. They were concerned about the community separator. This area is between two communities, and they wanted to preserve the rural character of this area. The lots that are being proposed are similar to lots in Atascadero and Garden Farms. And they felt that the 2.4-acre parent parcel, which is below the minimum parcel size of this area, was not a good, suitable choice for a TDC map. This is an odd case where you're presented without a recommendation and you have the paperwork in your packet to either approve this project based on the findings or conditions listed in your packet or deny it based on the findings. If you choose to approve this project, we'd like to add a quick condition.
I better read it in the record. Cammie Griffin, County Planning Staff. We would like to add a condition 23 LMNOP that would read, this is in regards to the setback waiver that Ms. Kavanaugh explained was needed for the existing residents. The setback waiver granted by CAL FIRE for the existing residents on Parcel 2 only applies to the existing residents. At the time of application for construction permits for any new residential construction on Parcel 2, standard setbacks consistent with the requirements of the land use ordinance shall be maintained. That would mean that new construction wouldn't benefit from that setback waiver. They would have to meet the standard setbacks.
And with that, I'll be available for any questions your board may have. Thank you.
Ms. Griffin, is a quick change, is that a legal term or is that a planning term? I see no. Yes, I do. Supervisor Assagian.
Last time this was in front of us, we were discussing about the existing TDCs and how many were available and how many we were going to consider before the new TDC ordinance kicked in, or understanding of the community-based TDC. Is what's left out there?
In the North County, there's, I believe, I want to say between 20 and 30 credits available. However, the South Atascadero community-based ordinance was approved by your board and is in effect now for new applications.
So this is the last one we'll see.
We have one more application, we think.
And
two? Oh, well, maybe Karen does have one. I guess two more applications that have yet to be processed.
That were in the pipeline, basically.
That were in the pipeline, correct.
Thank you.
And no new applications submitted yet under the new ordinance, under the community-based ordinance.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Kavanaugh, Ms. Griffin from board members?
When you ladies went to the Subdivision Review Board, what was your recommendation at that time?
The second time we returned with the new map?
The very first time.
The first time was, my recommendation was to approve. The Subdivision Review Board denied the map.
Thank you.
there are no other questions or comments, we'll open to public. First request to speak is Jamie Kirk, followed by Eric Greening.
She's the...
Thank you, members of the board, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jamie Kirk, and I'm representing the Iopini family this afternoon, and I do have a PowerPoint I'd like to run through quickly, if we can get that up on the screen. Ms. Kavanaugh stated, this is a two-lot TDC subdivision, coming back to you for the second time. It's a 2.48-acre site. It's in the South Tascadero planning area. There are two permitted residences on the site. It's not a primary and a secondary. It's actually two permitted residences. This project was in and accepted for processing prior to the moratorium for TDC projects in South Tascadero. This project went to the Subdivision Review Board in May of 2007 as staff answered your question with a recommendation of approval from staff. It was, along with that recommendation of approval, was a recommendation to adopt a mitigated negative declaration on the original project layout. Subdivision Review Board denied that project, and we appealed it to your board. We brought this to your board on August 21st, and you reviewed it, and the item was continued to the December 11th meeting. This was the original project that you had seen both, as Elizabeth stated, both residences on one lot. Before the meeting in August, we had the opportunity to meet with some of the supervisors, and there were some concerns expressed with the original configuration, so we took some thought into what was said and looked at how we can make the project better and address some of the concerns, and those lots had to do with the flag lot and the access easement, and that there wasn't a shared driveway, which is a requirement of the planning area standards in South Tascadero, and a concern about introduction of additional density onto the site. So we looked, you asked us to consider other options to at least address some of the concerns brought up by the neighborhood and make sure that we comply with the planning area standards. So we did look at that and brought forward a revised map, and that is the map that was presented to you with an identified building envelope that meets all the required setbacks from neighboring well as well as the swale that runs along the bottom of the property. This includes a shared access, and we agreed to a condition of no more additional residential structures, i.e. guest houses and secondary dwellings are not allowed. County Council recommended we continue it because it was a change in the layout. Supervisor Patterson, I believe, suggested we go back to SMAC and Subdivision Review Board. We went to SMAC, and they approved it. Subdivision Review Board again denied the project. Got some pictures for those of you that haven't been out to the site. The project meets all the requirements of the subdivision standards, the residential suburban subdivision standards, and the TDC subdivision standards. I'd like to run through quickly findings of denial. Subdivision Review Board found that the approval of the two lots would erode the rural character and diminish the separation between Atascadero and Garden Farms. There's no uniform settlement pattern in the area. There's already existing lots that are similar in size, and there are several one-acre lots adjacent to this property. Another statement that was made is the project does not meet the intent of the TDC ordinance. And whenever I look at the TDC ordinance, the intent of that ordinance was to transfer density to areas within or in close proximity to urban areas, and this site is in close proximity to three urban areas, and additionally, it has services available. It does have community water. And then the statement that the redesigned lots are less than half the size of the average parcel size in the immediate neighborhood, that immediate area is subjective. There is a neighboring cluster division, and so there are 24 lots less than within 1,600 feet of the project that are less than 1.24 acres in size. Difference with that lot is the cluster. You've got your on-site open space preservation, whereas this lot going down to the 1.24 acres, your off-site, your open spaces off-site in the form of a TDC purchase. And here is the map, the assessor parcel map, showing the smaller parcels adjacent to the property. I think what happened in the averaging test that was done by staff, it was prior to the recordation of this cluster division, and what was included was the open space parcel and not the one-acre lot, so I think that might have skewed the density a bit whenever we're, or the parcel size whenever you're looking at average parcel size. Conclusion, the project meets all the requirements for a residential suburban subdivision and the additional locational and environmental siting requirements for a TDC receiving site. It does result in no increase in density, which I think is a plus. And finally, this project was in the pipeline prior to the moratorium on the TDC projects. Thank you. And I'm available for questions if you have any.
Any questions, Ms. Kirk? I appreciate it. Normally we do 5 minutes for a hearing, but if you need an extra minute, I want to...
No, I think we kept it short because I know your board has seen it, and I think we were able to make our points.
Any questions of board members of Ms. Kirk? Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move on. The next speaker is Eric Greening, followed by Christina Aguirre.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I'm kind of hoping this coming forward with two sets of findings and no recommendation is not a sign of how things will happen in the future, because it is rather confusing. I've always felt a finding is something you have to actually be able to find. And I've found our staff has always been very professional in calling your attention to what is findable. And if you decide not to take staff recommendations, I think it should be incumbent on you to do the job of hunting, to find something you can find that will support what you want to do. We shouldn't start calling them inventions and just inventing them. I find the findings for denial far more convincing than the findings for approval, and I'd like to call your attention to denial finding E. Quote, the existing parcel is still substandard in size below the 2.5-acre minimum parcel size set by the Salinas River Area Plan, unquote. That quite accurately describes the planning area standard for this area. In great contrast, in approval finding A, it says the proposed map is consistent with applicable county general and specific plans because it complies with applicable area plan standards. Obviously, those findings are not consistent with each other, and the second one that I read to you simply is not consistent with the facts. If it says applicable area plan standards, I presume that means applicable planning area standards. The applicable planning area standard is 2.5 acres, and the denial finding has it correct. So please find what you can actually find, which is findable, and don't do any inventing. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker is Christina Aguirre, followed by Dolores Simons.
Hello. My name is Christina Aguirre.
I apologize for mispronouncing your name.
And I live on Carmel Road in South Atascadero. And if this body wishes to approve the Iapini's application, I kindly ask that a condition on the placement of the second house be only at the same site of the existing residence, which is a garage guest house, which would be demolished anyways in order to have the house built. This would be in keeping with the other houses on that side of the block, eliminate a flag lot look, keeping the house out of the swale, and being a better distance from the view of the two nearest neighbors. After all, they will have to deal with the consequences, and this may ease their effect. Please let me remind you that the Subdivision Review Board on November 5th, 2007, denied the lot split for Iapini's property. They had various reasonings. Drainage was one, and so was size. Size of parcels are a big deal to us in South Atascadero. I live by the cluster development that was recently talked about, and the one-acre parcels are over at the south end of the north end of South Atascadero, over by me, and it's not really that close to this parcel. And I'm not very happy with that cluster development of 1 acre because most of us have over that 1 acre, and we like to have our livestock and our animals, and we like to have the bigger size, the 2.5 acres. And so anyway, thank you for your time,
I appreciate it. Thank you, Blake.
Thank you for your comments, and again, I apologize for mispronouncing your name. Dolores Simons, followed by Adela Barrett.
My name is Dolores Simons, and my property abuts the Iapini property on the east, the downhill side. I've been living there for 32 years. Because the negative declaration of March 27, 2007 has been issued for this proposal, I enclose a copy of the discrepancies I found previously in it, and they're still using the same picture up on the thing that shows that the property line is way over on my property. Also copies of two aerial photos showing incorrect property lines. There is a sheet listing seven photos, the flow of the drainage across five properties. The copy of 22.104.040 figure 104-37 shows six blocked roads in South Atascadero during stormy weather about 25 years ago. You couldn't get out of the South Atascadero area to the east of El Camino Real because of flooding or a slide. Six roads were blocked. Some of these roads continue being blocked to this day during bad weather, but thankfully, not all of us at the same time. The flag lock from the first project has disappeared, but we still have a drainage problem, and the conditions could be worsened depending on the size of the house on Lot 2 and where it will be built. Also, an increase in people who will be living there could make a difference. Because of wet weather, our mucky soil, I lost three trees year before last and one 50-foot pine last year. A render on Iapini's property had a horse slip and go down on the sloppy field where the swale is. Many neighbors have had tractors stuck in the mud, including us, more than once. The project would be out of place in this neighborhood where most parcels average 3.5 acres. 1 2/3 acres and 1 2/5 acres are inconsistent with the pattern of development in the South Atascadero area. The parcels start out at 2.48 acres, which is substandard in size, below the minimum parcel size of 2.5 acres set by the Salinas River Area Plan. The Department of Planning and Building I did want to say, though, that 1 acre parcels that they were talking about down at the other end of Carmel.
Ms. Simons, unfortunately, your time is up, but if you can summarize your last sentence.
Well,
it is the holidays, I'll allow you to finish your last sentence.
That thing went ahead, and it still doesn't have a connection to Santa Barbara Road like they said it was going to have.
Thank you for your comments. Last request to speak is Della Barrett. Ms. Barrett, you can take your water up there. Just don't spill it on the microphone.
Sometimes my voice fails me.
If you'd like to take it with you, sure you can. We just don't want to have water on the microphone is all. Dr. Thomas might have to do some CPR out there because of electrical shock or something.
Thank you for that courtesy. I appreciate that the applicant revised his application after speaking with you supervisors, and I'm under no illusions that had some of you not said that you had concerns with the original application is the one that would still be here. When this came before you before, back in August, and the revised application was submitted showing the new way of dividing the lot, we drove away so happy because we thought at the time that what the applicant was applying for was to keep whatever would be the new house at the site of the existing small house, and that the septic leach lines and so on would stay where they currently are. And that's kind of up on the uphill side of that property. But then when the plan came and was presented at SMAC, the building envelope is much bigger and down into the swale than what we were expecting. And indeed, they can now, with this new application, if it is approved, because then after that it's a ministerial permit, they could build down in the swale and put the leach lines down in there. And you saw the pictures before of standing water down in that area. So if you do approve this today, I really ask that you make sure that you include the conditions that the Subdivision Review Board recommended for this lot, and in particular, things that are in Exhibit B under drainage. It's the low-impact development things. It's all the things that will really help the downstream neighbors of this property. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was our last request to speak. Since this is a hearing, Ms. Kirk, did you want to use your 3 minutes for any final thoughts here?
Thank you, Jamie Kirk. I'd like to respond to just a few of the items that came up. One comment was from Mr. Greening, just with the concern that it's not consistent with the general plan. The TDC ordinance is a component, came out of framework, which is a component of the general plan, and the TDC ordinance language specifically allows the planning area standard to set the base density for the project, and then from that you're allowed your density bonus. So it's clearly consistent with the zoning ordinance requirements. We did identify a building envelope on the map that met the requirements set forth by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. There was a lot of discussion about the swale, the drainage. What is it? Staff couldn't quite put their finger on it. Planning staff, environmental health couldn't. No one could make a decision or wasn't comfortable making the decision. Is it a swale? Is it a blue line? So we had the opportunity to have Regional Water Quality Control Board come out into the field, which we haven't had that opportunity on many projects. And we had them come out because what is it? Do we need a 50-foot setback? Do we need a 100-foot setback? And they went out, did a site visit, and determined that it would be subject to the 50-foot setback requirements, which is defined, I think, in the basin plan as a swale. So we took that extra effort to make sure that we were appropriately characterizing it and having the adequate setback from it. We sized the building envelope in such a way that we have enough room for a house and a septic system. I mean, everything that's going to be associated with that structural-wise is going to have to be within that building envelope, so we wanted to make sure it can accommodate any future construction and to make sure that it complied with all the setbacks. And so it's not in the swale, it's up the hill from the swale, and we appreciate the comments from Ms. Simons. Her house is down a little lower than the building envelope, so I think she faces some additional problems that hopefully, with the way the building envelope is designed, and if your board approves it, it would be required that would be recorded on the map, and building would have to happen there. So I think that concludes my comments, and we've been working on this project. We were accepted for processing in 2005 on this project. We've been working for quite some time, and applied Mr. Iopini whenever he applied. It was before the everything happened in South Tascadero. You didn't see us here speaking against the South Tascadero community-based plan. If that's what they want, we support them coming in with the plan, but we also hope your board will support someone who applied support the rules that were in place whenever we were accepted. Thank you.
And before you stand down, Supervisor Assagen has a question or comment for you.
Yes.
Ms. Kirk, you answered one of my questions was the swale, but number two was drainage issues, and I might want to ask that to the staff. I'm not sure. Does that happen during the planning of a new site, or is that Either one of you welcome.
The way I understand the subdivision review board is that those were conditions that would be attached for future building, future construction. So as someone comes in for a construction permit, they'd be required to implement the LID.
But even if that wasn't a condition, I assume that that would be a concern for the planning department to address it during the process.
Thank you, Cammie Griffin, County Planning Staff. You're right. At the time of building permits, the planning department and building department would evaluate drainage. In this case, the extra condition of requiring the low-impact development type of drainage solutions has been put into place.
Thank you.
Okay. And if I might, if we do move towards approval, there were two conditions that I had a suggestion on. One of them was on, and I can't read page numbers on mine, but it would be condition 15, gas lines shall be installed. Talking with the owner, there's not gas lines in the street there, so we'd want to make sure that
you tell us, are you in the exhibit?
Where is it?
A's or B or where?
You know, I can't read mine. I've got a bad copy.
And what is the change?
Number 15, gas lines be installed. It's talking with the owner, there's not gas lines in the street, so we want to make sure we're not installing gas from Atascadero out to the site. And condition 12, septic system, if we would have to submit perk tests since the lot's approved with an existing residence and septic system on it, if we'd have to come back in and do that extra step again.
So would the new structure use the existing septic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is an existing septic system located within that building envelope we identified.
Mm-hmm. Is your request eliminated to conditions?
Correct.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ms. Kirk, before you stand down, Supervisor Patterson also has a question.
Yes.
Ms. Kirk, within the building envelope that's designated on the exhibit, is there room for 100% expansion of the septic system?
There is.
Within that envelope?
Yes, we had Eric Gobler, a licensed civil engineer, look at that to make sure that we have adequate area for expansion. So we do.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Kirk?
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tandow. That was our last request to speak. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes. Since this is in my district, I thought I would have first stab at it here. And
now you're the first and only.
Perhaps. So far. I want to make a comment basically regarding comments that both Ms. Kirk and Mr. Greening made relative to the findings. And oftentimes we see findings that contradict each other. And when you go through all of the various general plans, you can pick and choose and find findings to support and findings to deny. And that's what's happened in this case. And it often happens in a variety of cases, especially when we reverse the planning commissions or the subdivision review board's recommendations and their findings for those recommendations. We have to do that, and we can successfully do that. And I do want to point out that this particular project does meet certain findings, and it doesn't meet other findings. But anyway, that's the situation we face. And I'm going to recommend that we uphold the appeal and approve the project. I'm not going to recommend that we delete the conditions that Ms. Kirk suggested. What I will point out is that the Subdivision Review Board did recommend this for denial for a variety of reasons. And one can, I think, argue both sides that it is appropriate or it isn't appropriate for South Atascadero. And we've been through this now for a couple of years, and I understand we have two more to go. And that area has a general plan overlay that has a 2.5-acre minimum, but our TDC program allows TDC lot splits down to the underlying zoning, which in this case is 1 acre. The 2.5-acre overlay was put there for a reason, and the community developed their own community plan, taking those conditions keeping those conditions in mind, and they've come up with a new community-based TDC plan that would not allow this particular subdivision to occur. But what is unique about this, and one of the reasons that I'm going to move for approval, is that there are already two existing residences on the existing parcel, and subdividing it into two parcels would not change that, because we have a condition here that will only allow a single residence on each parcel. No secondary or granny unit would be allowed. And so it won't change the density of the area. It'll just simply change the ownership of the parcels. And I believe the other conditions are met when the residents of the area, and this is precisely why it's important that you participate in this process, because the issues you've raised have made for a much better project than we would have had otherwise. And that's the net benefit. The items mentioned relative to drainage, they're in the conditions already. Page C625, items 8 through 11 specifically speak to the drainage issues, and I think will mitigate the problems that would occur in this situation if another residence is built. I do want to include the condition that staff recommended regarding the variance or the waiver for the setback to the one property line of 20 feet, and if there's a substantial change to the residence on parcel 2, that we go back to the standard setback of 30 feet. So that covers that issue. That was a recommendation of the Subdivision Review Board. So with those comments, I will...
have some lights on. No. You're right.
Okay. Would you want me to make the motion now, and then we can have people speak
to it?
You might be able to answer my question.
Okay.
Because if I may...
Supervisor Sergeant.
Mr. Patterson, you spoke of the conditions 12 and 15, that you want to maintain those conditions.
Yes.
And condition 15, and I'm asking for clarification, either staff or Mr. Patterson, to see what the understanding is. Under 12, septic system, if you have existing septic tanks, what are we doing anything different here?
Actually, staff would make a recommendation relative to condition 12. As to condition 15, if gas lines aren't there, then gas lines aren't there. It'll be caught at the time of final map.
Clarify that for me, because that's going a little too fast for me.
Oh.
For
the gas line condition,
right.
If there's no gas lines in the area, then we won't require gas lines. So it's only if there are gas lines there that they be extended on.
And this is clear with the applicant.
Yeah, that's a standard condition.
If it's not there, it's not there.
But
if
it is there, right.
Okay.
As to condition 12, excuse me, and also condition 11, both of those should actually be conditions attached to the additional map sheet, because they're conditions that apply at the time of construction permits, as opposed to conditions that apply prior to final map recordation. So we would actually recommend that condition 11 become condition 23Q and condition 12 become 23R, with the only change to condition 12 where you see the bold prior to the filing of the final parcel map, that would become prior to issuance of construction permits.
And since we have some changes, should we ask if the applicant understands what we're talking about here?
Ms. Kirk, would you like to step forward and acknowledge, deny, or question?
Yeah, as I understand it, we're taking 11 and 12 and putting them on the additional map sheet so that they become construction requirements. And so I guess just to add, I hate to get so convoluted and confusing, but maybe we can add condition 8 over there too, the submit drainage calculations, because that will be part of the building permit.
Actually, Public Works will want those.
They'll want that for the map. Okay. Then other than that, and we're fine with that and the additional conditions that were suggested by staff. Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification. If that's Mr. Patterson's desire, I'll second the motion.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson, would you like to make a motion now?
He already did.
Yeah, I basically made the motion. And
go ahead, do it again. So
I saw.
I don't get that look from
you. Yeah,
that's a bad look. I suggest you make the motion again.
Yes.
There we go.
As suggested by staff.
Okay.
We have a motion that includes the changes suggested by staff by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Assange. And Madam Clerk, a roll call.
And actually, I would just offer a comment, if I might, Mr. Chairman. I was not fully awake to get my light on.
Slow it down a little bit today.
Yeah, I am. I'm in a mellow mood. But
keep going. We'll make it past five.
And we might yet get our free meal. No. In what may well be a purely symbolic gesture, I'm not going to support the motion. As a means of upholding the discretion that the SRB has exercised in making this decision. This is a close call. It is a judgment call. The argument is made in this case and others that this was in the pipeline, that it meets all a certain list of things that are often trotted out in front of us. But I think it's important to note that the findings that the SRB made are in favor of denial are actually completely defensible. And I think that our work with the revisions in the community-based plan for South Atascadero support the idea that the incompatibilities that are listed in the SRB's findings are, again, completely defensible. I think I understand the motivation for doing this subdivision. You know, the previous subdivision clearly was inferior to what's presented here. But I would note the one that's presented here is cutting that fine line that causes us to have to do a setback waiver and a number of other things. So as a means of just making the point that that discretion is part of a discretionary permit and the review authority should be able to use that discretion, I will be voting no.
Thank you for that explanation, Supervisor.
Mr. Griffin, would you like some water?
Call a question.
Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shashian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
No.
Mr. Linthal?
Yes. With that?
Let me, on the way out, thank the staff, too, for working long and hard on this. It's been a 2-year process, and I appreciate your.
Dr. Thomas, is this going to be a standing or a seated presentation?
I was going to stand, assuming that my mouse will cooperate and.
On the advice of County Council, we've decided not to assume facts not in evidence yet, so we'll check that mouse out first.
Read the next.
You want me to read the next item on the agenda?
Please introduce it, please.
Next item on your agenda is E1, submittal of an annual report on the San Luis Obispo County's Clean Syringe Access Program. Recommend item be received and filed.
Thank you. Greg Thomas, Health Officer. Jason Wells, Drug and Alcohol Services. Hopefully this is going to. Yep. Okay. We're here to talk about our 1-year report update on the access to clean needles, both the syringe exchange program and pharmacy selling syringes. I'd like to, this part of the law, as we'll say, of AB 547, which was set up to allow syringe exchange programs in California, also said that there needed to be an annual hearing to allow full access to any and all who wanted to come and provide input into the success or failures of the syringe exchange program would have ample opportunity to do that. So the first part is SB 1159. This is the one that allows for a disease prevention demonstration project allowing pharmacies to sell up to 10 syringes over the counter without a doctor's prescription. That goes through 12/31/2010. It also does require collaboration between pharmacies, counties, and Department of Health Services, now the State Department of Public Health. As we said, they can purchase up to 10 syringes without a prescription if they are at least 18 years of age, and legally possess up to 10 syringes if acquired from an unauthorized source, and carry use syringes in a Sharps container. The participating pharmacies must register with us, must provide a system for safe syringe disposal, And in this, in the case of the one pharmacy, on-site sewage disposal program is used and must provide information regarding drug counseling services that are available. Dana Nelson's Health Plus Pharmacy is the one participating pharmacist so far. He came and testified when this was heard before this program started. 120 persons have used this service, and no problems or issues have arise from that. The small sharps container, it'll fit in your front pocket if you need to, is given to each customer, and the sharps containers are collected at the pharmacy. And Jason's going to correct me if I say anything incorrect, like that those sharps containers will...
Yeah, that, I did. They're a little bigger than that.
They're a little bigger than my front pocket. So, okay, so we'll now switch. That is just an update that does not is not required a hearing. This now is the one that requires the hearing by the Board of Supervisors on, in front of the Board of Supervisors on an annual basis. And this is for the Synergy Exchange Program as a result of AB 547 that went into effect October 2005. Purpose, to encourage the integration of Synergy Exchange into HIV and hepatitis prevention efforts throughout California. We know that Syringe Exchange programs do provide an important bridge to recovery, to treatment and recovery, that it reduces HIV transmission among injection drug users, and that it by itself does not increase the injection drug use population or crime. So the implementation, I believe you were all part of that program. We started March 7, 2006. We created a implementation committee that Chair Lenthal was the chair of, and we went through some modifications and came forward together for a program. And basically it was approved to move forward July 17th of 2006. We worked through July through October to get everything going, volunteers trained, staff trained, and started the program November 1st, 2006. Our goal, again, reduce HIV and hepatitis incidence, decrease needle sharing, and increase the proper disposal of needles. So where are we now? That was the background. This is now. Where are we? We're operating a Casa San Miguel Syringe Exchange Program, Mondays from 5 to 7, and that started more recently. Starting last year was when we began in San Luis Obispo in the Public Health Department parking lot on Johnson Avenue. It's a one-for-one exchange. That is, you only get a new syringe if you bring in a used syringe, up to 30, over 18 years of age again, distributing harm reduction materials and referring treatment and other services. Now on to data. Some of our goals, obviously, will demonstrate that we took more syringes in than we gave out. It's hard to say small numbers in a 1 year to talk about reducing hepatitis or HIV, but we do, as of this time this year, have only 47 cases of hepatitis C reported that are non-correctional. That is, they didn't happen. They're not CMC or Atascadero State patients. So this is less than a third of last year. This is premature to say that a Syringe Exchange Program is responsible for this, but, you know, if the data is in your favor, don't argue. Again, in terms of the number of HIV cases, we're going from one system of unique identifiers to a names reporting system, and so we can't compare last year to this year. However, we'll compare anyway. So you'll see that we've had 14 AIDS cases in 2005, 5 in 2006, and 2 so far in 2007. Some of the fall in AIDS cases is not due to the new whether or not we have new cases of HIV, but you don't get labeled as having AIDS until you have very advanced HIV, and our drugs are better for treating HIV, and so it slows that progression to AIDS. We do have, in 2007, 30 cases of HIV that have been reported. Some of those may have been recognized in the past and reported under the unique identifier system. So this is just 30 cases that have been reported this year. Now, our syringe exchange program, thought you'd like to know the gender information. There were 183 visits to the syringe exchange program, primarily in San Luis Obispo. I don't think we'd had too many weeks in San Miguel by that time
This is all San Luis Obispo data.
This is all San Luis Obispo data. So you'll see a male preponderance, 146 versus 37. Again, you'll see 183 clients visits, and that represents 50 individuals. That is, you can see some of them came multiple times. Finally, we know that we still have work to do because Drug and Alcohol Services basically has 107 other patients involved in treatment or counseling services who are injecting and not using syringe exchange program. So we know we need to continue to be out there getting people to use the services of syringe exchange program if they are going to inject drugs. What are the drugs? Well, it's about a 50-50 split between heroin, opiates, and methamphetamine. This is probably not a huge surprise that there's a lot of methamphetamine in our community. This is the number of syringes exchanged per month. You'll see that October looks low, but it's an incomplete. The data was not complete by the time we put this report together. It just took a long time to get on your agenda. But you see overall a growth, and again, these numbers represent all San Luis Obispo numbers. I expect that with the opening of the San Miguel service that we'll see increased growth. We expected, as we started up this program, that it would take time to develop trust, to get people to willing to come to the public health department with their used syringes and exchange them for new ones. And indeed, it took 3 weeks in November of 2006 to get the first client there. We have seen growth since that time. Total syringes exchanged, 5,368. Those are syringes in and syringes out, a lower number, 4,676. This was an interesting slide to me because it says how many times are people using their syringes a day, and we had wondered what this would be. Now, this is early data, and whether or not exactly this data will be hold, but I think it's an obvious trend. What's missing there is the number one, to me, you know? How many times do you inject? Doesn't sound like anybody injects once a day. Reasons given, 73.9% or 73.3%. No access to new ones is the reason they share needles. So this shows that there is a need for, this was information gleaned as we started the program.
We have a Cal Poly student who's doing some her graduate thesis on this, and one of the things that I think is interesting to note, when I first saw the slide, I didn't quite understand it. When it said reasons for sharing, it said boyfriend, spouse, and risk unknown. What she was discovering is people were reporting the reason that they share is they think it's okay to share with their husband, their boyfriend, their spouse, or if they don't know the risk. And so that's why it has shown up in that certain way. And part of the education that we've given out is do you know who those people might be sharing with? And sometimes they have the light bulb and the aha go off that maybe they don't.
And Jason, if you would, for those that are listening or watching, would you please state your name and who you are? That
Jason
on the
Wells,
radio
Drug and Alcohol
on television,
Services.
They don't know.
Yeah, I always forget that part.
One more time.
Jason Wells, Drug and Alcohol Services.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas?
Okay. So this part of the analysis is what services have they utilized previously. Methadone program and Aegis are one and the same. So a significant number, 70% have been to a methadone clinic in the past, and less than 10% have been through Prop 36. I guess that implies none of them were on probation, because there's a big sign that says if you're on probation or parole that precludes you from having syringes, you may not use this service. As you can see, 33% of clients reported sharing needles in the past 6 months, and 50% reported sharing syringes at some other time.
Craig, I just want to clarify. 33% reported sharing 6 months prior to coming to Syringe Exchange. These were as they were coming in. They had said in the past 6 months they had shared, not
right.
Once they were in the program.
Exactly. I'm sorry if that was not totally clear. Further questions? We'll continue looking at syringe sharing, syringe reuse, injection frequencies, some of the same information we've already provided, use of safer injection techniques, and that would be sterilizing the drugs, that heating it up so it's sterilized, and using a filter, a cotton filter, so you're not injecting particles into your vein. And
better vein care, the things that people generally end up in ER for or need more health services for, to basically self-care, better hygiene, washing your hands, very simple things that don't often or can't be done in the street. We're trying to teach them.
Drug treatment, obviously, well, that's one of our high goals, is to get people who are injecting illicit drugs into drug treatment so they'll stop. HIV and Hep C status we'll also be providing information on. There was a concern about whether there would be crime in the area of the syringe exchange program, complaints, etc. We've had no complaints. We have had no reports of discarded syringes. I should note that the implementation committee, all the members were invited, and some of them attended a meeting that Chairman Lenthal chaired at the one-year follow-up time, and a number of the law enforcement agencies were represented and brought the fact that they had not experienced any increased crime or drug use activity in their experience. Okay, this is Jason's slide.
My slide, the future. First off, we want to, and if people are listening at home and they want to be involved in the syringe exchange program, we are continuing to try to create a list of people who would like to be involved and could be trained as volunteers. And we are also looking into resource development. We've had two improvements in this area. The state has signed into law the ability to spend HIV prevention funding on purchasing syringes, which is a huge factor in our sustainability. We've applied for a grant, the North American Syringe Exchange Network, which we expected to know by now but haven't heard but we think we're going to get, that helps the sustainability of that program. Community education, we want to continue to be able to educate the public, to educate law enforcement. Anybody who comes in, I get questions, sometimes media, sometimes people calling up just to find out. I had somebody ask me the other day, they said they were a diabetic. Could they come in with their syringes and deposit them and take away? I said, we don't ask questions about why you use the syringes. If you want to deposit your syringes and take away some, you can do that. Obviously, it's a program geared towards people who are injection drug users, but it's also no questions asked, and I'm happy to do that education. We mentioned permanent site up here. Probably a more appropriate might be a fixed site. I think we're pretty permanent where we're at the health department. But we're in the parking lot in a van, and ideally, I think eventually we'd like to move indoors. And we had an opportunity on the health campus there, but we're still trying to see if that's a good fit for the rest of what's at the health campus. IDU and first aid CPR training. There's been a lot of very proactive pilot studies done on teaching injection drug users first aid and CPR so that they can be better at saving each other's lives and taking care of each other, instead of just when somebody goes out on an overdose, calling 911 and everybody runs. And we talked to Supervisor Lenthal about this a little bit. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but we can see in the next 6 months that'll be some of the training we're going to try and do with people who are coming to Syringe Exchange. And what's interesting as you go forward and develop a relationship with these folks is that they really want to be part of the solution for what they're part of. They haven't gotten into treatment yet, and we're trying to get them there if we can get them there. But short of that, we want to do what we can do to keep them alive and to prevent them from spreading HIV or Hep C to any of their partners or contacts. Before we go to the next slide, which is a thank you slide, I just want to deter a second here And Dr. Thomas is going to be leaving us very soon. And I want to thank you personally and professionally for the work and the leadership that you've done in this area. Dr. Thomas has been, I came into the county working in HIV, and he's been an advocate for prevention, and he has been a friend of the HIV community. And I know I'm speaking for others who are part of that community in prevention and services, that you will be missed. And I wish you well in what you're doing, and I want to let you know that you'll be missed. And I appreciate everything you've done for this community and for the county in this area. So thank you.
And Jason, if I may add on to that before, I guess your slide got taken off, but you wanted people to contact you. So would you please, for those that are listening and watching, slowly repeat your phone number, your email address, and your location for those that know that to contact.
I'll give you my number, because right off the hand, I can't remember the syringe exchange number unless, do you know it? 805-235-8044.
One more time on that then.
805-235-8044.
Thank you.
Now that we got everybody confused, let's do it one more time.
Yeah, all together.
805-235-8044.
And for those that don't have a computer or internet access, your location is?
We are at 2191 Johnson Avenue.
On Wednesday.
On Wednesday nights, 5 to 7. Yeah, 5:30 to 7:30, I'm sorry.
In San Luis Obispo.
In San Luis Obispo.
And at Casa San Miguel.
And Casa San Miguel on Mondays.
5 to 7.
Yeah, it's the Scooby-Doo van, actually. No, it's the community health outreach van.
Mr. Wells, anything else?
I don't know if you wanted to do the thanks or.
Well, thank you to Jason. Thank you to the board members, yourself, for having the courage to say move forward on this. Supervisor Lenthal has provided leadership and support for helping us get this implemented. To Jason, who has been a leader in the HIV prevention community, to Bull Cheney, who's here, to Cheryl, Jamie, and Lois, because without them, the program would not exist. So thank you very much, and we're open for questions.
Thank you, Doctor, for your kind words. First, Supervisor Assange.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, gentlemen. Question, I hope it doesn't come across negative after all this positive. In the beginning, you reported one needle exchange, you bring one, you get one. Also, at the same time, you report that you bring in 30 syringes, you get 30 in return. If somebody comes in with 30, are they supplying it for maybe underage or selling them, or what is the purpose? Does that raise a red flag for you?
No, if you look at how many times people are injecting, you see that 2, 3, 4 times a day is not uncommon. If you are using that many needles a day, we don't want people to reuse needles. Coming back once a week or every 2 weeks, you can easily use those 30 needles.
So there is no limit, and if the person uses as often he or she might, then that's up to them as how many they bring in exchange.
Well, the maximum is 30, so we do not go above 30.
So that's where the 30 comes.
Yes, yep. And that was figuring that's really the maximum that we could imagine people using in a week.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wells, you spoke earlier about needs for the program as it moves forward into the future. And the first need was volunteers. And I thought it might be appropriate, if there are people out there listening and watching, if you could take just a minute and explain what volunteers would do for you if they were working in the program.
Sure. Probably the main opportunity is actually staffing a syringe exchange in the evenings. Generally, what that would require is they'd go through a training, and a person is in essence an outreach worker for the evening. They would be at the table with an experienced outreach worker, and as people come in to the exchange, They would help gather data and help supply whatever they're exchanging. Someone comes in with 10 needles, they fill a bag. They may talk to them, they may counsel them. Again, as that trust and relationship develops, I think the kind of person that would be an ideal volunteer is somebody who feels like they can connect with, they're a helping kind of person, it's a helping position, and they would be a person who could connect at that street level with somebody they've never met before and be able to engage them in a way to support what their needs are right there. Sometimes it's just the bag of syringes, and sometimes it's a lot more. Sometimes it's my spouse is in jail, my kids got taken away from me, I have no money, what do I do, where's the bus, where's the homeless shelter? And people that feel that they can be of service in that area, those are the kind of folks who we would enjoy having be a part of the program.
And you mentioned that they would not be working alone, they would be working with an experienced.
We always have at least two people at the site.
Great, thank you.
And they would obviously be signing a legally binding confidentiality agreement.
Yes.
Okay, good. I too want to thank both of you for bringing this to us and working through the process to get it landed, and it at least preliminarily looks like it's very successful doing what you said it would do and what it wouldn't do, and we're consistent so far. And I also want to thank Dana Nelson's Health Plus Pharmacy too for stepping up and making the effort to help implement the buyback and the exchange program through the pharmacy. So he was willing to do it, and it appears to be working there as well. Mm-hmm. So this is an example, I think, of how we're proactively addressing an issue up front instead of having to address the consequences after the fact. And this is a good way to go, and I think it speaks well of this board and of your efforts. So thank you.
Thanks.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's remarkable that you have in the, sounds like fairly near future, the thought that you might be teaching first aid CPR. It speaks to a significant relationship that's being developed with the clients. Mm-hmm. And certainly one of the hopes here is to develop those relationships that could get people directed toward treatment. Do you have any even anecdotal evidence that that's happening, that that's working?
You know, I can speak to the idea that people are going into various paths towards treatment. Some people are ending up in NA. Some people we know have been in and out of the methadone treatment program. And with encouragement, you know, Fred Cheney is in the audience here, and he's been a strong advocate for that. And the other staff that are at the tables and volunteers are always giving information about that. We don't have any hard numbers to be able to report out. We've had people at drug and alcohol who have reported that in the recent past they had used the needle exchange program, and vice versa. We've had people at our office who have asked questions about. We posted little tear off flyers for it, and people have taken those from our program, and so it's working both ways. Some people, as they slip out of treatment, may be going into exchange, and some people from exchange may be slipping into treatment, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to next year's report.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to get a public comment, and Mr. Cheney, we're going to give you a chance, but Dr. Thomas, I thought long and hard what I want to say today, because I really owe you a public apology, because I was one of your biggest critics. The culture I came from saw the death and destruction of needles, and you really had to prove to me and make the case that this was a good thing. Not only did you do that, but I think you went far beyond and allowing me, at least, to see the bigger picture and the people on that committee. I also think it's important to announce the people that were on there, Dr. Thomas, our District Attorney Jerry Shea, Chief Probation Officer Kim Barrett, retired Paso Robles Police Chief Dennis Cassidy. I think he's retired now. I'm not sure. Tascio Police Chief John Couch, is he gone today? Or? Okay. Marsha Bollinger from our health department, and also Jason Wells, because this truly was a team effort, and we had serious questions, comments, and concerns from the law enforcement perspective, from the community perspective, and I can't say enough from how far we have come since March 7th of 06, and the real credit is to you gentlemen right here. And so, Dr. Thomas, I publicly apologize for even doubting your medical ability, but that wasn't the culture I came from when you see what needles do to people. But I do think this is a good program, and I'm anxious to hear what Mr. Cheney has to say in public comment, because I think he's going to say a few things that are going to really enlighten some people's eyes. So if there's no other questions from board members, I'd like to open up to the public. Mr. Cheney, would you like to step forward to the microphone of your choice, sir?
All right.
Please state your name for the record, and don't mention my name in any of your stories.
It's Frederick Bull Cheney, Executive Director of Gate Help Incorporated, and a syringe exchange, user-friendly. I want to thank Dr. Thomas also. I've known Dr. Thomas for a long time, and I know his heart's into this. He does most of his work, I think, from his heart, and it shows. And Jason's always stepped up and helped us out a lot, but I want to really say a lot about the staff, because of my position in the recovery community, a lot of people don't want to come to the syringe exchange because they don't want me to know that they're using drugs again or started or whatever. So I've had to kind of step off and not be there, and my staff has stepped up. Actually ran me off a few times and stepped up and been there in the cold in the evenings like today. Tomorrow they'll be sitting out there, and you know it's cold right now. Wind's blowing, and they sit there for those 2 hours, 2.5 hours without complaint, and all I have to do is suit up, show up, and bring them a little coffee, and they're happy. And so I want to really thank Jamie, Lois, especially Lois Petty, for being there, and for my helper, Cheryl Kazir. She's really been really helpful. But what I can see in the community is, on a personal basis, you know, I'm an HIV positive, hepatitis C positive person with a needle in this county. So, and I'm not ashamed to say that it happened, and it maybe if we may have been doing what we're doing now, it may not have happened to me and others. I'm not the only person that this has happened to. For me, it's been a blessing because I wouldn't be here doing this if it wasn't for that. So. I really appreciate the open-mindedness that I see here. You know, I always thought that the Board of Supervisors was pretty closed-minded and real business-like, and it's been—I've changed my attitude also towards that. You guys are real open-minded. You listen to people that speak from the heart, like Dr. Thomas and myself and Jason, and I want to thank you for that. Excuse me?
We're still business-like.
Yeah, I know you are. So. I just want to thank you guys for that. You know that open-mindedness is a key to a lot of things, and I know in recovery, it's one of the biggest keys is open-mindedness and honesty. You know, and so I can honestly say that if it wasn't for you guys, this wouldn't happen. Period. It would be happening someplace underground, and that's not the way to do things. I don't believe that. I think everything should be above board and be done the right way. So, and we've had the opportunity to do this. It's working. It's working well. I think it's going to take a little bit longer for us to get going really well. But the education, overdose prevention, those kind of things, I think are paramount. We really need to be doing those things because that's where it happens is in the culture. So thank you again.
And Mr. Cheney, if I may, only because I'm still amazed at the number of people that listen and watch this program. Would you just take a minute and elaborate a little bit on your personal background and talk to the people that are listening to say you really need to get involved in this program. If you need some help out there, this is somebody that's going to help you, because it's one thing for Dr. Thomas to say it. It's another thing for Jason to say it as an advisor or a mentor to a group. It's one thing for us to advocate it as public policy. You walk the walk and talk the talk. So could you take a minute to those that are listening, if they have any doubts about what this program can do for them or to get clean and sober, how it's helped and impacted your life, because you do have a compelling story to tell.
Wow. Thanks for acknowledging that. I think there are two different things, recovery, 12-step recovery, and the syringe exchange program are two completely different things, which can be linked together. One can lead one to the other, and I don't know which one's the best way. If you're in a syringe exchange, well, the best way is if you're in a syringe exchange program and using it and you ended up in recovery and didn't use drugs anymore, got healthy, happy, and responsible into your community, would be a great thing. But that's not the way it happens usually. Usually happens, they try recovery two or three times, and they end up back out in the streets again using the syringes that they may have been hidden someplace for a month or two even, or used by who knows who. So syringes are a tool that's that's used quite a bit by the IV drug user. And I know that because I'm one of those guys. You know, I'm one of those guys. I was thinking a couple of numbers when you were speaking, and the numbers I was thinking was 17 and 51. And those are, I did 17 years in the prison system, and I'm 51 years old. And I didn't have to do any of that stuff, and I think using syringes had a lot to do with it. You know, had a lot to do with it. And I know using syringes was the main reason that I became HIV positive. If I wasn't using syringes, it wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened for me. But, you know, you're ready to change when you're ready to change. And I think that my staff there is ready to talk to people and give them the information as to where they can go to change if they want to change. But it doesn't come through. I can't make anyone change, and neither can you. But they have to be ready to do that. The syringe exchange, I think, is one avenue that people can go down. That's non-judgmental. That doesn't ask questions, but has answers. If that makes any sense to you. So I think that's enough about me anyway. So I just appreciate being able to do this, being able to step up, change my life, and step up and come here and be acknowledged at a Board of Supervisors meeting with those two numbers, 51 and 17, you know. So thank you.
Thank you, and I appreciate all the good work you do for this community. I know our board shares that sentiment because, like you say, you've lived there and been there and done that. And I think when people question the credibility of different programs, they need to hear from the source that says, you know, I've been to the other side of the mountain, and it's pretty dark over there sometimes. So I appreciate you fighting the good fight, and I want to personally congratulate you on continuing to be clean and sober and a good, productive member of this community.
Thank you.
Anything adjourned?
No, this is a voice voter says here.
Receive and file.
Madam Clerk, you wrote voice on here. Was that?
Receive and file.
Okay.
So I moved it. Receive and file.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you.
Yeah, hit the road.
22 minutes to spare. We'll make it.